Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Think we're going to have us some fun tonight. And, of course, a lot of good information. But we're going to start off with fun and lunacy and the general sort of nuttiness of the religious wrong, the religion industry, as we call it. Well, like I said on my Facebook page today, and if you're not friended up with me, Bob Kincaid, on Facebook, why not? I've never turned a friend request down yet. There's also, by the way, a porn Facebook page. You can find that just by looking for the H period O period R period N period. And we accept all friends. So join up there as well. The Horn is also on MySpace too. We're Bob Kincaid is Twittering, although I haven't Twittered much yet. I will, but I did put a post up regarding tonight's program, because we are going to be joined in a few minutes by the national spokesman for American Atheists, David Silverman, and David and I always have a wonderful conversation. And I have no reason to think that this will be any different. He'll be with us just in a matter of a couple of moments. So look forward to that. And then later in the program, lots of other things to discuss as well. We've got 3 hours to work with here. So I hope you will find this as enjoyable as I am expecting it to be. David Silverman will join us in about 7 minutes or so. I accidentally cut Agnes off when she was trying to dial him only moments ago, because I'm so used to driving my own telephones after she abandoned me back here that I reached over and pressed the button, not realizing that she was already in. Oh, okay. She had David on the phone. Nice, Bob. Very nice. Oh, gosh, that must sound professional. that's where the program goes. And, of course, your calls as you see fit. So let's get this thing started. If Agnes can tear herself away from the off-air conversation that she's having with Mr. Silverman. Just any old time, dear. I didn't realize she brought the iron skillet back from the kitchen with her. Oh my God, don't hit me, honey. We're letting everybody hear your off air conversation, dear.
Well, I'm happy.
So here in just a matter of seconds, we'll bring David Silverman onto the program. I think Agnes is going to hit me with the iron skillet yet.
Not really. I love him.
Some. You like me well enough.
You call me when you need me.
Oh, that woman. So anyway, from American Atheists, the national spokesman for the organization, and genuine, bona fide friend of the program, David Silverman, joins us from New Jersey, I presume. David, welcome to the program again.
Hey, thank you for having me back on the show, Bob.
It's always a joy, and I enjoy the just enjoy the dickens out of our conversations because you guys do such a wonderful job of keeping up with all the general nastiness that the religion industry tries particularly to foist into our government. Let me ask you right off the bat, what's on the threat board? What's high on the threat board lately there at American Atheists?
Oh, well, right now we're working on, first of all, we're trying to get into the Obama campaign. The Obama campaign was the first presidential campaign in recent history to actually solicit the atheist vote. And they did it through us. They came to us. They actually called me on my cell phone, and they actually gave us a statement soliciting the atheist vote. And that was great. And then they disappeared. And so what we're trying to do right now is we're trying to make sure that they understand that we are here to stay and that we are going to be an active part of their administration. What we're also doing is we are taking a suit to the state of Kentucky, which is just doing something. It's so funny to see. They basically have the state of Kentucky Homeland Security Office.
Yes.
Their primary goal, their number one responsibility, is to acknowledge that Homeland Security is impossible without Almighty God. And they need, as a primary responsibility, to publicize that inadequacy. So they actually are coming out and saying, we can't win without an invisible magic man in the sky.
Right, because is this like some sort of battle royal between Allah and Yahweh or something?
That's the scary part. Bob, when it comes right down to it, sometimes I feel like it is a battle of Christian versus Muslim, or in this case, Christian and Jew versus Muslim, and we atheists are just stuck in the middle.
Well, yeah, it's the eternal battle between tastes great and less filling, with the normal people paying the price in the middle. Exactly.
And we're just trying to duck, and we're just trying to keep cover. But it's very, very scary when we've got this kind of language in the Homeland Security Office. My God is better than your God, or my God can beat up your God, is the last thing that people say before a war escalates.
Well, aren't those the very words of, what was his name, General Jerry Boykin from some years back? You remember General Boykin, don't you?
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
Oh yeah, this was the general that was tasked. I mean, he was in Somalia. I mean, you know, had the jewelry on his shoulder boards and everything, stars all over the place, and said, and he was going around making making speeches, ostensibly for money, telling people, well, the reason we won in Somalia is because our God was bigger than their God, and Allah's a demon.
Oh yes, actually, I do remember that.
Yeah, I knew he wouldn't be far from your mind. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's just amazing, and there's a lot of problems in the military right now with that. But really, it's down. It's not just in the military. It's in the mentality. It's in the mentality that it's our God versus their God, and of course, our God is all of our God. And if you're not part of our God, then you're outside, and you must be probably with their God.
Forgive me. I understand every word that you just said, Dave, but it just almost sounded like you recited the first verse of Jabberwocky.
I know.
Our invisible cloud friend is better than their invisible. Oh, dear, this is
yes.
A problem.
Yes, and we're going to have a problem. And then when we say, hey, wait a minute, you know, The Office of Homeland Security is there for, you know, to protect us from real terrorists with real guns. And if you're actually putting this in, you're actually making this into a religious war. And it scares the dickens out of us. And when we fight that, we are assumed to be on the side of a terrorist.
Or the devil.
We're the bad guys. We're the bad guys. We're un-American.
And yet, well, I think the last time we talked, we were discussing the rather stunning statistic in the United States. How many people are irreligious now? 20% of the population?
20? Well, depends on how you define irreligious, but I'm using 16.
Okay.
I'm using 16 because the most recent poll, and it's more than 20% of people under 25. And I'm using 16% because that comes from a most recent poll in the USA Today where they clump in, where they clump in secular this, secular other, agnostics and atheists, which in my opinion are all exactly the same people. And they clump them together. They get 16%. That does not include the Jews who are secular, or the Christians who are secular, or the Muslims who are secular, and that's many, many people, but I can't quantify it. So I use 16, which gives us a nice round figure of 50 million people in America.
Well, so let's back up just a second, and you're far better at mathematics than I will ever be. however, with that number that you just tossed out there, I'm thinking about the percentages by which Barack Obama defeated the forces of darkness as represented by John McCain, and I'm doing all this. You know, you guys are 501c3. You don't have to do the – I'll do the political commentary.
Okay, go ahead.
But Barack Obama defeated the forces of darkness. And is it safe to say that one may make a cogent argument that the non-believer vote pushed him over the top?
I don't know if it pushed him over the top. I think it pushed him over the top in some states and some areas. I think certainly where there were squeakers, we were the player. We were a major player. And the fact is that, like I said, they came to us and they solicited our vote, and they solicited our vote the Thursday before the election. And if they come to us and they solicit our vote, they only do that for one reason. They need us.
Right.
And they know they need us. So they came to us and they said, hey, you know what? We just want you to know that we want your vote, too. We want the secular vote. This is the place at the table. This a wide umbrella. This is for everybody there. And they gave us a written statement that's on the No God blog. Then they disappeared, so it was really pissing me off.
But they got
a lot of things to do, and then they brought in Rick Warren, which really also pissed me off too.
Well, and that's the thing. There are several groups who supported Barack Obama right now who are suddenly, and some are rather surprised to be seeing what the underside of a bus looks like, having been thrown under it.
You know, I am one of those people that got really, really angry. And you know, I'm on a lot of email lists, and I talk to a lot of people within the organization and within the movement and within complementary movements. And the underlying toe is, okay, we're going to give Obama the benefit of the doubt on this one. I wasn't in that camp. I wasn't happy with Rick Warren. I thought it was a slap in the face. But in the name of inclusion, the Obama camp is saying, we're bringing in the religious right, we're taking the high road, and the underlying toe in the, from the good guys, for lack of a better word, the underlying word from the good guys is that we're going to not cause a ruckus, not raise a riot, and just see what this does. Because as much as we hate to admit it, the religious right does have a right to be there. Now, of course, there are 26 different religions being represented in this inauguration, and none of them are secular.
Well, and then that's my point. You know, there was a great hue and cry, and justifiably so, when the Brother Warren was announced as the guy who was going to be giving the invocation at the inaugural. And then some people said, well, yeah, but look, the benediction's being given by Joseph Lowry, and you can't challenge his street cred. And then, you know, just a couple of days ago, the inaugural committee sort of threw a crumb to the gay community and said, well, we're going to let your gay minister pray on Sunday. But nowhere in this list, David, do I see, say, the Richard Dawkins or coming in to say, well, you know, that's all the fantasy's over now. That's very nice. Let's get down to reality. Gee, that wouldn't take very long, would it?
It wouldn't take very long. And you know what? I got an email today from our legal director, Edwin Kagan, on what he would say if he were asked to do it. And he wrote a very, very short, very nice, all-inclusive, one nation, indivisible type of statement. And we're not getting that visibility, and I do have the phone numbers, and I do have the email addresses, and I am being ignored, and it really pisses me off. So, you know, we're going to see how much this goes and how well this goes. We obviously have made great strides, but are not all the way there yet. We're not equal in the eyes of the government, and we're not equal yet in the eyes of the Obama government, but we're getting there.
Well, let me back up just a second, David, and ask you, going back to this Kentucky thing, just because the wheels always turn, that's why I'm always walking around with smoke coming out of my ears.
Okay.
There's not much lubrication on the rusty old cogs in my head. You're challenging this Kentucky, and this is a state law. This isn't some regulation, is it? This is something that
the State Department of Homeland Security has as its primary goal to do this, to acknowledge God and to publicize the acknowledgement of God as a primary goal. Then the next thing they're going to do down the list is defend us from terrorists.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, when I think about a state legislature, you and I both know how legislatures work. You know,
yeah.
The bill's introduced, it goes to a committee, it has the first reading, the second reading, the third reading, in both houses, you know, sometimes it's conferenced and then it gets passed. And the idea that this piece of unmitigated silliness made it through that entire process.
It was snuck through, and this is the kicker, okay, and this is an important detail. It was snuck through 2 years ago, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This was put through 2 years ago, and nobody knew it. It was snuck through. We didn't see it. And they took a plaque, and they put it up on the side of a hallway in a building somewhere on public property, and they left it there, and nobody knew. Now, people tell me, you know, what harm is that? What harm is that? You know, why do you care? But, you know, the reason that we found out about this was that the religious right, having gotten their way, was complaining that they weren't touting it enough. They wanted more. That's how we, American atheists, found out about this. Because the religious right was complaining that the law that was passed 2 years ago wasn't being trumpeted enough.
Dear God, this is straight out of Peter Pan, Dave. This is Peter standing on stage saying, "Clap louder for Tinkerbell."
That's exactly it. And this is the slippery slope. This is the slippery slope. This is why we say the religious right is never satisfied with whatever they get. Because even when they get what they want, and we don't put up a fight, their next step is to want more. And they don't want more Allah. They don't want more peace. They want reliance on God. And if you fight that reliance on God, you must be a terrorist sympathizer.
Right, because they want Jesus with an Uzi.
Yes, they do want Jesus with an Uzi. That's right. That's a scary thing.
These are the times that try men's souls or the lack thereof, Dave.
Yeah, but we have there is a lot of good going around here, though. Okay, even though you and I have been complaining for the last 10 minutes about the fact that we're not in the inauguration and the fact that we have this Kentucky lawsuit, there are some serious good things to talk about that happened in this election. First off, I say again, it's the first time that we were actually solicited. Okay,
mm-hmm.
the presidential campaign came to us and solicited our vote. But that's not the big point. The big point, or one of the big points, is Pete Stark of California was reelected.
Absolutely.
Soundly by a big fat margin. Pete Stark came out as a non-theist. He won't use the A word, but he's certainly using non-theist. He came out in the middle of his last term. So this was the first time an outed non-theist got elected to Congress. And it wasn't an issue during the election. It was not an issue.
Could that have something to do with the quality of the district he represents?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I mean, that couldn't happen in Mississippi. But, I mean, we are talking about, I think it's the 12th district of California. But we are talking about, you know, it's the first time.
Sure.
And now there are five other Congress people who have not declared a religious affiliation. So we've got serious progress there. The first time that an actual congressman has been elected as an outed non-theist, as an outed secularist, That's a big, big thing.
That is, well, that gives hope.
It does.
Because, you know, the heart and soul of what you, if I understand the American Atheists' mission statement and stance, it is simply to see the First Amendment followed.
That's it. We don't want any rights that other people don't have. And we don't want anybody to have any rights that we don't have. And that's it. That's all it is. All we want is the cornerstone of freedom of religion is the separation of church and state. Every tiny step you take away from separation of church and state is a step away from religious freedom. When you put a plaque on a wall that says Jesus will protect us or God will protect us, that is a tiny step. Yes, it's a tiny step, but it is a step away from government neutrality. And when you step away from government neutrality, you step away from fairness and equality.
Well, you know, obviously I'm asking you in this next question to comment on something with which you may not be familiar or perhaps conversant, but do other religions, other Christian religions, let's leave Muslims and Hindus and the people of the Jewish faith out of this for a moment. Do other Christian religions not understand that when the fundamentalists get their way like this, that it threatens Catholics, that it threatens the Episcopalians, that it threatens Presbyterians and Lutherans?
They look past it, and I'm gonna lump the Jews in there too when it comes to certain things, like because most of the Christian stuff that's happening right now, they call it Judeo-Christian, even though it's
this. Oh, that's so true.
But when it comes down to it, they ignore it completely. And there's an article on the atheist.org website about the Philadelphia Bible Wars, when the Catholics and the Protestants were literally rioting with each other over which Bible was to be taught in public school. And now they're trying to put up the Ten Commandments, and they're putting them up everywhere, and suddenly people are beginning to realize, see, those aren't the same Ten Commandments that I was raised with. Because the Ten Commandments for the Jews and the Protestants are not the same as the Ten Commandments for the Catholics. They have different commandments.
And, that reminds me, every Christmas, just to mark the season, as it were, apart from noting the solstice and stuff, I bring my kids in here and we read out of the New Testament. We read the story of the birth of Jesus. And we do that for a reason, because we read it out of Matthew, and then we read it out of Luke. Mm-hmm. And anybody who didn't know better, and actually it might be the other way around, people who do know better, would swear that those were the stories of two different births.
Yes.
So that you're right. It's not one man's nightshirts, another man's pajamas. There have been millions slaughtered over this. We've got a good friend by the name of Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com, and he is a profound student of the Byzantine Empire, and has pointed out on a number of occasions the willingness of the people within that culture so many centuries ago to slaughter the daylights out of each other over a question of literally one preposition inside a definition of the Trinity.
Yes.
So this is. I know that the right wing is fond of saying, well, you know, whatever, you know, it's a plaque, big deal. But it is a big deal because people will commit murder over plaques.
They will commit murder. They will riot. They will die. I mean, think of the cartoon in Denmark. There are people who right now who are dead because of the cartoon in Denmark, and that's Muslim. Now, just think about the plaque on the wall in the nation's Homeland Security office. Think about that. I mean, people died in Denmark over a cartoon. What do you think that's going to do to the religious terrorists here? And let's not be blind to the fact that we have Islamic terrorists here in this country. They're here. How do you think that makes them?
They haven't been sufficiently weaponized at this point, I suppose, would be the technical term.
And that's the scariest thing. So we fight, and we fight to make sure that the separation of church and state is preserved, because that's how everybody stays equal. Not special rights. No special rights for atheists. No special rights for Christians.
Well, just out of curiosity, David, we haven't seen so much of it lately in this country, but it has cropped up in others. What about the laws that say, for instance, well, they did this in France and caused a huge uproar, that said you can't wear your headscarf to school?
Yeah. it gets to a point where there's going to be a gray area between religious freedom and homeland security. There is going to be that. When it comes right down to it, if every Muslim wears the exact same clothes and those clothes hide their entire features, well, you know, that's when Homeland Security has got to come in and say, hey, you know what, we need to be able to know what you look like. Okay, we need to be able to know that you're a 90-year-old woman and not a 30-year-old man in a burqa with a bomb on his chest. It's completely reasonable to get to that point. Now, people would say, well, what about Jews wearing yarmulkes? Well, Jews wearing yarmulkes, that doesn't hurt or that doesn't hide any identity. Burqas wear identities. Burqas hide identities. And that's the scary part. And that's, you know, there's going to be a gray area, and I would hate to see that gray area come here, but I fear for it because I don't know if I can fight against it. When it comes right down to it, we need to know what people look like, especially, dare I say it, the Muslim community. There are good ones and there are bad ones, just like there are good Jews and good atheists and bad atheists.
Sure, and it's not much help to law enforcement if they say, and what did the perpetrator look like? And the only answer is, it was somebody in a bag.
Yeah.
I mean, let me ask you this, Dave, and we will go on to some other stories and talk a little bit as well, I hope, about the convention coming up.
We haven't even gotten to Senator Hagan yet.
No, we haven't, and we will. I just because I'm a little bit of a smart aleck, but also because I wonder about strategies. Edwin Kagan's been on this program, and he's a wonderful man. And I imagine, from the sound of things, he crafts the legal positions of the organization.
Yes.
When you sue over something like this Kentucky business and this silly plaque, and I say silly from the standpoint of functionality, not from the danger that it poses to our constitutional liberties. But when you sue, as opposed to just saying take it down, have you ever wondered what would happen if you sued to have God, Krishna, Vishnu, Buddha, Confucius, you know, include everybody, including some of the ones that are really hard to spell, like Huitzilopochtli?
That how you pronounce that?
Yeah. come on, you'd probably have to rehang the plaque in Kentucky five or six times just to get that one word right.
See, that's the thing. When it comes to the separation of church and state, it's an all-or-nothing deal. This is why, and I'm not going too much off on a tangent here, if you remember the issue in Washington State about the FFRS plaque on the Washington's front lawn, next to Jesus and the menorah.
Right.
And their plaque was a very secular plaque which had in it something along the lines of religion hardens the heart and poisons the mind. You have to allow everything if you allow one. You have to, okay? The problem with the Kentucky, you know, your question is, can we ask for that? No, we can't ask for that. We can ask for a secular plaque and the Hindus can ask for a Hindu plaque, and you have to ask for your own. And that's fair. But in the end, that's been turned down. It's not a matter of that. It's a matter of the State Office of Homeland Security taking it as a primary objective to admit and publicize that it can't happen, that it can't secure the populace without the Christian God, without Almighty God. So can we put everybody up there? Yeah, and then we can, and that would be legal. Okay?
It would be, wouldn't it?
It would be legal, and the walls would be lined with all different kinds of plaques, and that would be legal, and that would be fine, and we wouldn't sue. And that's not the case. And what we are doing is we are suing, and because of a really unfortunate legal ruling last year that ruled that in order to sue the government for separation of church and state, you have to have, in order to have standing, you have to have consequences. You have to have somebody who has been damaged. So we have damages in our lawsuit that talk about physical and mental anguish over absolute fools and traitors running our government. But we have made it very, very clear that we would settle our damages suit because we have to put it in there. We don't have a choice. We have to put it in there or it'll be dismissed summarily because we don't have standing due to this unfortunate law that was passed last year. So we have made it very, very clear that we will settle with the state of Kentucky and their good citizens very, very, very cheaply if they just remove this silly phrase from their law and take down the plaque and obey the law that they're supposed to obey. And it's something that and why can't we leave it there? Because we did leave it there because we didn't know it was there, and they already are asking for more.
Because they run with the bit in their teeth.
They run with it. They don't take what they get. They run with it. This would not be the end, and we know that for a fact because we found out about it because it wasn't the end. They asked for more.
And that is the terrifying part of the of this whole story.
Why don't you leave it alone? Well, if we leave it alone, it gets bigger. It doesn't stay the same. It gets bigger. And they wanted it on the front page of the website. They wanted it publicized in the newsletter. And they wanted it taught to every person who was there that it was impossible to secure our borders without the help of God.
You know, I'm old enough, David, to remember way back during the Iranian hostage crisis in the late 70s. When the Iranian foreign minister or whomever he was would show up on Nightline with Ted Koppel or whatnot, and the guy would say, and Koppel would say to him, "Well, how are you today, sir?" And the guy was a perfectly good English speaker, but the first thing he said was something in Persian that amounted to, you know, "All praise and glory be to God," yada, and he'd say, "I'm fine, Ted." And America found that so funny. But that's the same thing that they're asking for in Kentucky here.
Yes.
Praise be to God, it's another day we haven't been hit by the tourists. I mean, everything they say, apparently Homeland Security, everything they say has to begin with glory to God.
And it's a sad, pathetic thing where they can't just say, we are the ones responsible. We take responsibility, and you know what? We need guns, not God. And we need people. We don't need prayers. We need to actually take care of the real danger that faces this world. And you can do it only with reality. You can't do it with fantasy. If you do it with fantasy, all you're going to get is more strife and more bloodshed. And that's why we fight. We fight to keep the religious right at bay, even on these little things, because we know for 100% fact that these little things grow.
Like cancers.
That's why. And they're cancers. That's right. They're poxes. They're cancers. And there's lots of them. I mean, we didn't even know about this one until they asked for more.
Well, in a way, you're a good-sized organization, but you are certainly outmanned and outgunned by the religion industry, David. And you've got to feel some days like you're fighting a monster with 19 arms, and you've got one of the two good ones you have tied behind your back.
It's been that way for 8 years. It's been that way for 8 years. It has been an uphill battle hitting against a brick wall for 8 years. But I'll tell you, we are making good movement. We are making strides. Let me tell you a little bit about the Kay Hagan thing.
Yes, please. That was where I was going next.
This was something that really was one of the proudest moments of my life. Well, maybe that's a little bit of an over-exaggeration, but I was very happy about it. Just to start from the beginning, Elizabeth Dole, right-wing Republican senator, losing a race by 45% to 55% in North Carolina. She takes a clip of me from the O'Reilly Factor, and she links me to Woody Kaplan, who is the spokesperson, one of the fundraising and spokespersons for the Secular Coalition of America. And Woody Kaplan was one of 40 co-hosts of a fundraiser that Senator Hagan attended once. And Senator Dole put a picture of me up on the TV commercial, and they rolled clips of me, chopped up clips of me, saying the most anti-religious things in the world that we would take God off the money, that we would take the pledge, the God out of the pledge.
Sure.
Just, you know, crazy, wild, crazy stuff like that. And then she said, this guy, Dave, knows this guy, Woody. And this guy, Woody, was at a fundraiser for my opponent. What was she doing with that godless money? What did she do with that godless money? And then they faked Senator Hagan's, Senator-elect Hagan's voice saying,
there is no God!
Right. And
yep.
It was a fake. And actually, I think it was Alan Johnson who was saying that. But the beauty of it is, it was pathetic, okay? It was absolutely, if it was about what is she promising the Jews? What is she promising the blacks? What is she promising them? If it was anybody other than what is she promising the atheists, it would have been panned. The good news is it was panned anyway.
Exactly.
The good news is that Senator Hagan's campaign got 3,800 new donors within 48 hours of Senator Dole running that ad. And Senator Dole's lead, or Senator Dole's numbers went from a 45-55 to a final loss of 35-65. She went
in North Carolina.
In North Carolina.
You really can't overemphasize that.
I mean, yeah, and that's, you're right, we can't. This was in the Bible Belt. She came out with this godless attack, and even the most conservative voices, you know, some people said, oh, they shouldn't talk about it, atheists like that. Most of the people said they shouldn't have faked the voice. They shouldn't have, you know, this is a low blow. They don't have anything to say. But nobody from the press said, hey, yeah, that's a good point. Nobody said that.
No, and this is after all the same North Carolina where four scant years ago, a Baptist minister there excommunicated half of his congregation for admitting to voting for John Kerry.
Yes, that's right.
In many ways, I think you could make the argument, Dave. I will if you don't. That this 8 years of phony hyper religiosity out of the Bush administration has done more for the cause of non-belief and non-theist and free thinking and agnosticism than just about anything else that we could conceive of.
Isn't that the scary thing? It's absolutely true. The George Bush has been wonderful for the non-religious movement. He's been absolutely wonderful. The movement has grown substantially since George Bush took office. Every time he waved his flag and his cross together, every time we had another religious, you know, the faith-based funding initiative came through, and they turned it down in Congress, so he pushed it through with executive order. That gave us more members. It was just wonderful to see this huge wave build up. And now what we have is a groundswell of atheists that are here and they are out and they are not going back in. And a lot of people are trying to call this a fad. This is no fad. This is trend. And we are catching up with the rest of the world, and it's about frigging time. And we're going to be, you know, with the popular with the acceptance of the internet, everybody can find support wherever they go. People can go anywhere they want now in the world and find people just like them. The closeted people are coming out of the closet, and the world is a brighter place thanks to George Bush. Which
I never thought I would see the day when there was a reason to say that, Dave, but you know what? It's a cogent argument.
It is, and it's a scary thing because it helps the country to see how dumb of an idea it was to elect a stupid person to be the most powerful man in the United States or in the world.
And see, okay? Dave, he's on his way out still doing the same shtick. He was on I don't know if you caught him yesterday talking to that life support system for a haircut, Sean Hannity.
No, I didn't see it.
But he was on there, and Hannity asked him about you know, God. And George said, I think, first of all, I think that those who say, you know, I'm very reluctant to say that of all the people in the world, I've been picked out by the Almighty. And the reason I'm reluctant to say that is, one, I don't know. Second, far be it for me to put myself in the Almighty's shoes or position. Some believe that. I have real trouble, as I repeat, I have real trouble, you know, saying, well, I know what God was thinking because I don't. And I don't know whether he means he wasn't thinking or he doesn't know what God was thinking. That's open to interpretation, just like the Bible.
He is absolutely of the opinion that God wanted him to be president because he said it when he was first elected.
Well, he did, didn't he?
He did. Of course he did. And he believes it because he's not, you know, he's partially egomaniacal. I think we've seen that very, very clearly. And I don't know which came first, the egomania or the belief that God wanted him to be president of the United States and absolutely positively wreck this country and send this world into war.
Well, it was the year 2000 when he said, I feel like God wants me to run for president.
Yeah.
But then in June of 2003 came the really creepy stuff that would get most people one of those wonderful white canvas jackets with the sleeves that tie in the back and a purple crayon between the toes. When he said, I'm driven with a mission from God. God would tell me, George, go and fight those terrorists in Afghanistan, and I did. And then God would tell me, God, George, go and end the tyranny in Iraq, and I did. I mean, this is loopy stuff, Dave.
This is scary stuff coming from the most powerful man in the world.
I mean, it was
God told me to do this.
Yeah, it was cute when Dan Aykroyd had the black suit and the black hat and the dark glasses on in the middle of the night, and he looked at John Belushi and said, we're on a mission from God. It doesn't sound so good coming from the President of the United States.
No, that's a scary thing. That's a scary thing. And hopefully we will never have a president like that again. Hopefully the people of the country will actually use the next 4 years to evolve up close to the rest of the world. We have an elected congressman. We have other congressmen who are refusing to give a religious viewpoint. We have people. Well, we have the presidential campaign soliciting our vote. It's a good day. And of course, that wonderful Hagen ad. I mean, it gave me personal pride because it told me that the religious right sees me as a threat personally, which is great. I love it. And that's like the highest compliment I've ever been paid, I believe. And I'm taking it that way, at least.
Well, it's like how proud Paul Newman was when he found out that he was on Nixon's enemies list. There's a certain honor in being the enemy of an evil person.
Yes, yes, there is, and I accept. And, I'm very, very happy with that whole thing. And I think that the future looks bright. I think we're going to have a fantastic convention, not only this year, but the next year. We're starting to plan our next year convention. And it's going to be a very, very interesting, productive, and forward-thinking 4 years, hopefully 8 years. And I think we will be involved in the Obama campaign. I think we will be involved in the Obama government. Mr. Obama does come from a secular background, a secular family, and I think we're going to see that. I'm a little discouraged that we're not in the inauguration. In fact, I'm quite pissed off about it. But you know what? I've been a lot more pissed off about other things, and we were solicited, and there were just so many good things. The only real bad thing about this whole election was the Proposition 8, which, there you go, against that 19-armed monster, the Mormon Church, and we simply couldn't beat that. American Atheist, by the way, did take a position. We don't take positions on other issues normally, but we did take a position supporting gay marriage because we see it as a direct, a complete separation of church and state issue.
With all due respect, pardon the use of the word, hallelujah. Because it's so nice to hear somebody, David, say that that gay marriage is a First Amendment issue.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. And actually, if you think about it, it is the picture perfect poster of the merger of church and state, because marriage is literally both religious and secular. It is. Okay? It you can say whether it was originally secular or originally religious, but what it is right now, it is both. And that's why we've got religious groups saying, no, you can't marry, and we've got secular groups saying, well, why can't I marry? Well, the reason is because church and state have been merged. And how to fix this is very, very simple. Simply stop justices of the peace and judges and cruise ship captains from marrying anybody unless it's a religious ceremony. Every ceremony that's not religious is a civil union. Civil unions are given civil rights. Every marriage performed by a church is granted civil union status, so nothing changes. And all of a sudden, gay people have the exact same rights as straight people. And there's no more stigma about civil unions, because every time somebody runs off to Vegas, they won't get married, they'll get joined. Every time they go to a justice of the peace, they won't get married, they'll get joined. And all of a sudden, by making that simple change, you separate church and state, and you solve the problem 100%. Now you're saying, okay, a church can marry these people or not. And if these people want to get married in this church, they have to be... they have to follow the church's rules.
Well, the fact of the matter is, as it stands, you can get married in 19 churches, and it does not count until the paperwork gets filed in the office of the county clerk or the registrar or whatever government entity it happens to be, because all the reality of marriage happens as a basis of government function.
Right. But at the same time, you cannot force the church, I mean, you can...
Oh, no, no, never.
You can't. You can't, because, and that's the problem, because marriage is both. That's the problem. That's the epitome of the merger of church and state, which is why we have a civil problem when religion gets involved. And the simple way to fix it is to separate them. And as soon as you separate them, the problem is solved. It goes away 100%.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Well, let's back up a couple of minutes before time runs out, because I don't want to, you leave me to my own devices. I'll take your evening up, David. but you mentioned the convention coming up. Let's do the basic journalism on it: the who, what, when, where, why, how, and how much.
Okay, the national convention is always on Easter weekend. It's April 9th through 12th. Actually, it's the Friday and Saturday, which is the 10th and the 11th, the 9th and the 12th, at the shoulder dates. In Atlanta at a 5-star resort, but we have very, very good pricing, which is why we do these things on Easter weekend. We can get very nice resorts and very good pricing. Richard Dawkins is our keynote speaker. He will be there. He will be signing autographs, and he will be speaking. And as much as I love Richard Dawkins, as much as I admire him, he is not the thing I'm most excited about. What I'm most excited about is, have you ever, Reverend Fred Phelps?
Oh, yes.
Got his bag? Guess what Reverend Fred Phelps has?
He's got an
atheist son.
Oh, dear.
And he's got an atheist son.
Is he going to come and picket his son, perhaps? Is that too much to hope for?
I hope so. But this guy literally escaped from his father. Escaped from physical and mental abuse. And he is going to come to our convention, and he's going to tell us what it's like to be part of the most hated family in America. And that's just going to be something that I'm really excited to hear.
Well, you've got somebody else on the guest list as well, David, that I think will speak to the listeners to this program. And it being
Mike
in Atlanta,
Malloy.
This makes sense. Exactly. Mike Malloy is on the guest list for this for this convention. And you know what, as a longtime Malloy listener myself, I can tell you that for those who may not be familiar with him, the attendees at the convention are going to be standing and cheering in the aisles by the time that man's done talking.
That's good. I've heard him. I've talked to him. It was something that I'm very, very happy with the breadth of the speakers that we have. And we're very, very excited to have Mike coming on. He's going to get us, really riled up. We also have Andy Thompson coming. And Andy Thompson is not very well known, but he was Dawkins' idea. and he is a psychiatrist that will examine why we believe in God. And so if you can imagine, it's going to be a double talk. And this was Dawkins' idea again. Andy Thompson is going to talk about why we believe in God and from a bottom-up perspective. And Dawkins is going to be coming in and say why there isn't a God from a top-down perspective. So they're actually going to sandwich the whole argument in a coordinated speech. And it's going to be very, very interesting. And, of course, everybody will be signing autographs. We also have a nice departure. We're going to be bringing in a man named James Morrow. And that's because James Morrow is a famous science fiction writer. And he's won the Nebula Award twice. I mean, he's a very, very high-end fiction writer, science fiction writer. And that's because, this was something that I really wanted, he is a friend of mine. And I go to these science fiction conventions all the time because my wife runs a magazine, a science fiction magazine. And I wear my atheist shirts, my atheist pins at these science fiction conventions, and I get cornered. I get swarmed by people who agree. So we are going to actively start soliciting the science fiction community by bringing in a James Morrow to actually bring in some new blood into the realm. We also have Michelle Goldberg coming, who is a journalist who is going to talk about how thick the Christian right is and how close we are to a Christian nationalist country. Getting back to where we were with George Bush. We've got a comedy troupe coming that's going to do some good old-fashioned fun comedy, and along that same line, we are going to have a mass de-baptism of the entire group, and we're going to give people cookies that are not the body and blood of Christ. And we are going
maybe
to
a nice little shortbread or something, you know, maybe some pecans. It's Georgia, after all.
We're thinking chocolate.
Well, yeah, okay, because there's a little euphoria that comes with the endorphin rush, sure.
Yeah, you know, it should be good. You know, deep baptism should be good, and we got a hair dryer instead of water. We're going to blow people with a hair dryer. this convention is going to be broad, it's going to be informative, and it is going to be a lot of fun. And that's really what we're going for here, because it's been a long 8 years. It's been so long.
Oh, hasn't it?
and if things are turning around, and we're seeing, you know, some serious movement. Ed Buckner is going to be there. He's our new president, of course. It's just such a wonderful that there's a real positive aura, for lack of a better word. There's a real positive attitude around the movement now. All of the secular groups, and I'm sure you remember. All of the secular groups that used to argue with each other, we're all done with that, okay? We're all done with that. We just had a solstice party here in New Jersey, and we had Fred Edwards from the American Humanist Association. We had Margaret Downey. We had people from all the different organizations. Woody Kaplan was there from the ACLU. We are all now putting aside all of the bull that has gotten in our way, coalescing into one great big movement, and there's going to be some serious movement in the movement over the next 4 years and 8 years, starting now. And I hope that everybody who can hear me will go to the website, which is atheists.org. By the way, atheists.org is a brand new website. It's completely redone. We're going to have some substantial, the No God blog is now on the atheist.org website. The Viewpoint TV show is now on the website. Everything is going to be centralized, and it looks nice and slick, and it's very, very interesting.
Oh, I've been there. It is. It is everything you say.
And there's going to be a lot. There's a lot more coming. We're going to have our own atheist social network on the atheist.org website. We're going to have a wiki on the atheist.org website. It's all going to be there. But for right now, you can go there. You can register for the convention. There are some discounts going on right now. And we are just really, really excited. We're pumped. We're ready. And we are really, really happy that we made it through this dark, dark time. And ahead of us is nothing but momentum. Or I should say behind us is nothing but momentum.
And, well, this sounds like it's going to be a marvelous good time. I will do everything in my power to get down there myself because this could be a huge blast.
I would love for you to come. I would love to introduce you to Dr. Dawkins. You know, it's going to be, he will be there. He'll be signing again. And last year, the signings went on for, he was just signing books for an hour. I mean, it just went, the line went out the door and around the place. And it will just be so much fun if Nate Phelps comes and Fred Phelps is outside protesting and picketing. That'll be just great. I hope they come. I hope the God Hates Fags people come because...
Well, everybody likes a circus.
It is a circus, and these are nasty, nasty people. And I want to introduce... I want to bring my daughter to see these people. My daughter, she has her own Bible, and she likes to go into the Bible and read the Bible and pick out all the dirty parts, and she has all the little stickies that she sticks in there with all the dirty parts from the Bible. And she thinks this is a great fun. And I would love for her to see and really talk to these Westboro Baptist people and find out exactly what Daddy actually fights. And it's just going to be such a great time. The year after that looks like it's going to be a New York, New Jersey convention. That's not solid yet, but that's what we're looking at. But this year we've got our eyes on Atlanta. It's going to be warm. It's going to be beautiful. The grounds are great. It's at the Emory Conference Center, and it's a 5-star resort. So it's going to be plush and cushy, and it's not expensive. It's like $120 a night for the room, which is just not bad. And we're psyched. And I hope that you can make it. I hope you can make it. I hope Agnes can make it. And I hope that your listeners can make it, and we'll try their best to make it down there because it's going to be worth the trip this year.
And see, if you go to a religious convention, there's a lot of pious people walking around, you know, and maybe they belly up to the bar and they get a good shot of single malt or something like that, and then they look around, or at least that's how it was being, you know, as being a recovering Southern Baptist. The deacon has somebody else go buy the liquor for him at the liquor store, that kind of, and you really can't enjoy it. I got a feeling that this is going to be a building full of people enjoying their lives, sort of along the lines of that advertisement on the bus in England that says, there's probably no God, so stop worrying and enjoy your life.
And they hate that ad. You know the Church of England speaks out against that ad because it tells people not to worry, and there's good reason to worry, and they should worry. That's their complaint.
What do they want people worrying about? I mean, there is stuff to worry about.
Because the more they worry, the more people turn to fictional deities, and they know that. But I mean, the Dawkins campaign is behind that bus ad, and they wanted the broadest ad, and they wanted the nicest ad. So they put the word probably in there. There's probably no God. Because they wanted in the agnostics and the skeptics and the doubters.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, to just relax and enjoy your life. Because they wanted to have a positive message that nobody could hate. And guess what? They hate it.
Well, you know, if anybody's going to hate the unhateable, it'll be a religion, right?
And you know what? I say, if they're going to hate us, let's put on some things to hate. You know, let's put on, you know, why is religion different from mythology? Let's get them talking. Let's get them talking about taxing the church.
Well, interestingly, David, I'm getting an instant message from our chief engineer and host of All Foxed Up, John Fox, who is down in Sydney, Australia. He tells me that a similar ad was rejected in Australia by the advertising company, and even when advertising is hurting, that they wouldn't take the cash.
Because in where is this, in Australia?
Yeah.
Australia is a pretty secular state. That surprises me.
Well, it is, but it isn't. There's an outfit down there of the fundamentalist evangelical, you know, Sony Jumbotron stripe called Hillsong. And these guys would put Jimmy Swaggart and Kenneth Copeland together to shame. I mean, they've got something that's got more tentacles than some mob organizations. And
so they're not allowing just I mean, don't worry, be happy, love atheists. That would be hated. And then that's, it just boggles my mind. You know, people say, well, why don't you take a more positive view? And I get that a lot because I'm an extremist. I know that I'm an extremist, and I have an extremist views, and that's because I'm extremely right, or I should say extremely correct.
Well, if we're going to, yeah, if we're going to couch this in their language, pride is a sin, but so is false humility, because they're both lies.
That's right. But I mean, if we're going to be hated, people ask me, you know, why don't you take a softer tone? And I say, because it won't get us anything. It doesn't get us anything. This is something that the bus campaign has told us. It gets members, yes, absolutely. It gets members and it gets money. But it does not get us respect from the religious community, and it doesn't make any point. The bus campaigns are great for getting closeted atheists out of the closet, and that's a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. But when it comes right down to it, I say let's make some points, and let's get some people talking about why religion and mythology are different things, why we're not taxing the church, why in the world do we allow faith-based initiatives, faith-based organizations to take money from the government without any oversight. You know, why in the world is it such a big deal that somebody must declare themselves to be religious in order to be elected to a political office, except in Pete Stark's case? Why do we have to go there? Let's get some questions answered. That's where I'm going. But I think the first step beyond that, the first step before that is these bus ads, these all positive bus ads that are just saying, if they're doing anything, they're exposing the fact that we can't make religious people happy. No matter how benign, no matter how simple, no matter how cheery our message, the religious people are going to hate it. They're going to object.
Well,
don't worry, be happy.
Yeah.
No, you can't say that. It's offensive to me. Don't worry, be happy is offensive.
I don't know how to approach this without sounding condescending, so I guess I'll just be condescending. Children don't like it very well when parents sit down and explain that they've been, you know, bullshitting their kids for 9 years and Santa ain't real.
Right. Right. And people hate that story. You know, when it comes right down to it, all religions have one thing in common, okay? They all have one thing in common, and that is immortality. You are not going to die, or you might not die. And when you take a person's religion away, or when you question their religion, you question their immortality. And when you question their immortality, the immediate reaction is a knee-jerk negative. And we have to realize that. We have to understand that, because people like to believe they're not going to die. People like to believe that their parents and grandparents are not really dead, that their spirits are somewhere playing a harp on some cloud somewhere.
You know, my dad hated harp music, Dave. He just did. So, you know,
Bob, it's such a wonderful thing to do your show. I love doing the show. And my wife is giving me eyes that I have to.
Yeah, well, I understand that, and I promised I'd only keep you till 7 Eastern, and you've given me 3 extra minutes. Well, actually, more like 6. We could do this once a week. Honest to goodness, we could. This has been such a blast.
It's great, and you know what? I love to be able to talk and just talk and just have a conversation. I love the conversation, just to get it out. I hope you can make it to the convention. Personally, I really would like you to get there, you know, maybe even do a show from there, and that would be wonderful.
Oh, that would be magnificent.
That would be great, and, you know, like I said, the website is atheists.org, that's atheists.org, and you should go there and you should check it out, because it's brand new, and we've put a lot of money, or actually no money, but a lot of time and a lot of volunteer work into this site, because, of course, American Atheists is almost 100% volunteer. We don't take money. We're doing this for our patriotism and for our country. And the person who redesigned his website, Jared, is, you know, really a workhorse, a very, very talented man who donated his very valuable time to make a fantastic website. So go check it out, and I hope to see you at the convention, because it's going to be a blast.
Well, I hope to be there. I sincerely do. And David Silberman, thank you very much for the time you've taken to chat with us. And you are welcome here anytime, as are any member of the organization who's got something to say and there's something needing said.
And Bob, we'll be back.
All right, take care, Dave. And our best to your wife, and tell her she can stop giving you the stink eye.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye. National spokesman for the American Atheists, David Silberman, always a joy to have a conversation with on this program. And, you know, listen, I don't do a lot of interviews, so you can take it fact that when there's a guest on this program, it's somebody that I really wanted to be here. And David Silberman is one of those people because I don't get religious about the First Amendment. But it comes awfully close. Because, as David noted, the First Amendment is the only thing that stands between us and any religious extremism in this country. Not just Christian, not just Muslim, not just Jewish. All of it. Because every religion has its fundamentalist branch, and every religion always exists in a state of dynamic tension, trying to fend off the weirdos of the fundamentalist movement. Whatever brand that may be. And only through the efforts of organizations like American Atheists do we even have so much as hope that this country will not devolve into a state of bloody religious insanity. I don't know. See, David's so right in that atheists have been loathed. And the church is going out of its mind in the United Kingdom over a simple ad on a bus saying, there's probably no God, so don't worry and enjoy your life. The church is losing its what passes for a mind over that. And I don't know if folks realize it or not, but American Atheists probably does as much or more to safeguard others' religious rights. Even though they are non-theists, even though they are irreligious in themselves, they do more by protecting the First Amendment to protect others. Because, you know, if it's the Christian Dominionists or more dangerously the Christian Reconstructionists, the Christian Reconstructionists would as gladly stone an Episcopal or some well-intended Lutheran in the far north of Minnesota as they would a gay person or an atheist or a communist or whatever ist the Christian Reconstructionists had decided they didn't like that day. There is a debt owed to the atheists in this country that most of us never acknowledge. And Lord knows the religion industry wouldn't admit if they were being waterboarded. Just a little food for thought. And Dave did mention the word evolution somewhere along in the process of the conversation. And I've got another story of one of their fights when we come back. So let's take a little break shortly after the top of the hour. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. And I, of course, am Bob Kincaid.
For a buck. You're looking for someone to put you out of that ditch. You're out of luck. Ship is sinking. The ship is sinking. Ship is sinking. There's a leak in the boy of you. The poor, the lame, the blind. Who are the ones that we kept in charge? Killers, thieves, and warriors. It's a job. Pulling the moon rising with the plague and the fun to the bar. Pulling them out. It's all over.
and that's the leap, that's the leap. The poor, the poor, the lame, the blind. Once we come to charge, killers, thieves, and lawyers.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty, let's do another hour. What do you say? I said I had a story about another one of the instances of fundamentalist religious insanity that American atheists are battling for the sake of all of us. But you know what? I'm not going to go there. Not yet. I want to go somewhere else. Oh, this is a fun story, and it's a loopy story, and it comes from a place that you would expect it to come from. I mean, the story's, well, you'll understand when I get there. But I want to go, okay, this might be a little bit difficult because it's the audio to a video, but I don't think you have to see the hate to comprehend the hate.
You know our buddy Max Blumenthal, right? Max is a videographer and one whale of a writer. And I think it was our buddy Luke that sent this along to me earlier today, and I'm awfully glad he did. Because Max Blumenthal attended a rally of about 10,000 people that took place in front of the Israeli consulate in Midtown Manhattan to support the slaughter of Gaza. And Max, being Max, whom you have heard on this program, you know, he's the one who peeled Pastor Hagee and Kufi like a grape. He's the one that brought you the video footage of Joe Lieberman standing in front of the crowd saying that Pastor Hagee was another Moses. Well, Max took his video crew and he wandered down to this rally, and you can see it for yourself over at Alternet. Alternet.org. I'm going to run the audio just to save you so you'll know what you're going to see and hear. Max went and interviewed people at this rally. The headline is pro-Israel rally attended by big-time New York Dems descends into calls for wiping out Palestinians, all right? That's the title of the piece if you want to go and find it. This is disturbing. Very, very disturbing. Hey, you remember... Wait. Let me hit the pause button and just ask you a question. Now, there are people all over the streets here. And they're waving Israeli flags and banners that call for the bombing of Muslims. But they're waving Israeli flags in downtown New York. Now, I want you to do a little time traveling with me real quick. I want you to tell me if you remember a couple of years ago when immigrants in America rallied and basically put on a one-day strike to send a message to Washington, D.C. that they were not willing to be shoved around, that the people who were carrying this country on their back, in large part immigrants from south of the border, were not willing to be demonized by a bunch of right-wing thugs, for instance, characterized most aptly by a 100% Native American Indian named Tom Tancredo, who certainly had no immigrant blood in his veins. A creepy little now former congressman from Colorado. And when they rallied, they brought their red, green, and white Mexican flags with them. And the right-wingers went absolutely out of their minds. I mean, there were just little right-wing heads all over the place going, pop, 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 pop. I lost listeners over it. Because they didn't like those immigrants getting all uppity and waving Mexican flags on American soil. How dare they? If they want to wave a flag in America, I can wave a Mexican flag. Well, suffice to say that there were 10,000 people waving Israeli flags in New York on January the 11th. Hear the crickets? Right. And never is heard a discouraging word. And America is Zionist all day. What? But no right-wingers screaming about waving Israeli flags in something that became damn near a riot 2 days ago in New York. But anyway, I digress.
USA 9/11, Israel 24/7. Israel, thank you for fighting our war on terror. Islam equals cult of hate.
Live Israel. God bless America.
Israel. Notice that the long live Israel came before the God bless of America. Just saying. Now, this is, of course, Senator Chuck Schumer.
Israel has sent phone text messages to Palestinians in Gaza, saying leave your homes because there are weapons inside them. What other country would do that?
Really, Chuck, what other country would do that? Leave your homes because there are weapons inside them. And they sent text messages. That's right. The Israeli government has all the cell phone numbers of everybody who has a cell phone in Gaza? I know this was supposed to play as some humanitarian measure that you're going to get something from the Twitter before the bomb falls on your kids, but, you know, I mean, please. And here's Governor David Patterson, who showed up for this thing, too.
Last 3.5 years, Israel has been bombarded daily by a number of rockets coming from Gaza.
When I say...
For the past 3 years, Israel has been bombarded daily by a number of rockets coming from Gaza. Governor Patterson, how many people have died? How many people have died from those rockets, Governor? 14, Governor! Now, how many Gazans have been killed by virtue of the use of what the Israeli Defense Forces says are pinpoint guided munitions, with which they are which are being targeted by virtue of GPS satellites? I mean, that's pretty impressive and high tech and scientific and gee whiz bang, right? Let's just pick it up.
For the last 3.5 years, Israel has been bombarded daily by a number of rockets coming from Gaza.
When I say Israel, you say rock! Israel! 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 What do we want?
Mashiach!
Yeah!
What do we want? Mashiach? Messiah? Now, we started off the program talking about religious insanity, and it ain't all the Christians, okay?
You guys out here to support Israel?
Yep.
Why?
Because they're pro-Western and everything, so, you know, don't want to get killed one day by these, you know, crazy people.
I almost said the A word, didn't he? Did you hear that? Don't want to get killed one of these days by these... See, they're pro-Western. They've got Nike tennis shoes. You know, made by little Vietnamese children breathing glue fumes in sweatshops in Vietnam. They're pro-Western, damn it! We'll try to get all the way through this, but there's a level of... because, you see, there in the West, this Western that Israel is pro... We have this idea that people who walk around in burlap sacks or who live in very sandy, wind-blown climates, who wear loose, billowing, robish garments, that they're somehow subhuman and, you know, a little bit crazy, and they make funny noises like when they're, you know, when their children get slaughtered, they all stand around and go, or whatever it is. And that makes them weird. They're not Western. You know, newsflash to the pro-Western people. When T.E. Lawrence went into the desert at the behest of the British government during the First World War, he was in the desert a little while in his official government-issued, His Majesty's uniform. But he went native, because those robes made a hell of a lot more sense in that climate. I won't bother to refer those of you who are readers of science fiction to Dune and the Still Suit of the Fremen, but you get the idea. So let's go back.
You know, crazy people.
I was at the World Trade Center on 9/11. I saw the shit that was going on. America has to wake up. It's coming to America just like it's happening in the rest of the world.
Yeah, that's right. Did you know that the World Trade Center was brought down by unguided Qassam rockets from Gaza? Did you know that? Neither did I, but apparently this goober thinks that it was.
The radical Muslim must be defeated unless we're going to all ruin the whole Western civilization.
So how many civilian casualties?
Shh, I'm sorry, I just got to say this. The Muslim radicals have to be defeated or else we're going to ruin the whole Western civilization. You caught that part? Shh. Don't tell this jackass. But Western civilization was more or less, you know, invented by the Muslims. I mean, we wouldn't want him knowing that or anything. I mean, at the time when scholars in merry oldie England were wallowing in their own feces, and the priests were desperately learning to translate Hebrew into Latin and stuff like that, and learning about Lot getting drunked up and done by his daughter. That's some holy stuff, that Lot getting raped by his daughter. Whoa, praise God! At the same time that was going on, the Muslims were introducing white Christian Western Europe to the idea of, wait for it, bathing. Yeah, because see, up until that time, the Christians had burned people alive for suggesting that bathing might cut down on disease, you see. The Muslims were distilling things and thinking about things and doing higher mathematics. You know, the kind of mathematics that white Christian Western Europeans couldn't do even if they took off their shoes and raised their robes to count, okay? Even the Pope couldn't do it. So, you know, about losing Western civilization, I mean, you know, I'm not saying that there's no such thing as a radical Muslim. There certainly are. I mean, there's some 6'7" scrawny ass, long bearded Arab with white robes and a portable dialysis machine in a cave in Pakistan somewhere that George Bush said he couldn't find, and what's more, that John McCain said on the campaign trail that he could find and he had a plan to get him, but now that he lost the election, he's not going to tell us, and I think that's pretty damn spiteful. I don't know about you.
Unless we're going to all ruin the whole Western civilization.
So how many civilian casualties would it take before you questioned the attack?
There's not a number involved.
Nothing good is going to come at it unless they keep fighting all the way with it till they wipe them all out.
Wipe them all out.
Yeah, they got to go strong with this.
There's only one way to deal with a cancer. You burn it out or you remove it. And when people don't want to talk and just want to destroy you and not allow you to live, there's only one thing you can do.
They are forcing us to kill their children to defend our children. Yes.
Where do you draw the line with civilian casualties where you start questioning what they're doing?
Well, this morning I looked on the AP and I saw a very, very terrible photograph. And that photograph was of a little girl in Lebanon in a Shiite community with her head being slashed because of a Muslim holiday. Her father, she was petrified, and her father is slashing her head. And his
Now wait. I mean, this is only a 6-minute clip, but it may well take us an hour to get through because it's so dense with bullshit. So let's back up and hear this crazy lady one more time.
Allow you to live, there's only one thing you can do.
They are forcing us to kill their children to defend our children. Yes.
Where do you draw
That's the same guy that said Qassam rockets hit the Twin Towers on September 11th. I mean, you know, he's Meshuggah. But they're forcing us to. But see, this guy's an American. He's not an Israeli. They're forcing us to kill their children to save our children. Well, our children are American children, mister. Or am I wrong? Has the United States, I mean, you know, we had the story yesterday that was hard enough to stomach about how the Ehud Olmert bragged that he was able to drag George Bush off a podium and away from one of his valedictory speeches because Ehud Olmert damned well wanted to talk to George Bush yesterday and get that little punk on the phone so I can tell him not to be supporting any resolution to keep us from killing the children in Gaza. He bragged about it to Agence France-Presse. I'm beginning to wonder who's the client state and who's the patron here. This is getting really embarrassing. And now here's this crazy lady who, you know, this thing is like a textbook on how not to answer questions. or when the guy walks up with the microphone, it is better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to open one's mouth and prove it. Let's go back.
Allow you to live. There's only one thing you can do.
They are forcing us to kill their children to defend our children. Yes.
Where do you draw the line with civilian casualties where you start questioning what they're doing?
Where do you draw the line with civilian casualties where you begin to question the validity of what they're doing? Now, I understand that question. Do you understand that question? I think we all understand that question. This lady apparently dropped acid before she came to the rally.
Well, this morning I looked on the AP and I saw a very, very terrible photograph. And that photograph was of a little girl in Lebanon in a Shiite community with her head being slashed because of a Muslim holiday. Her father,
Max Blumenthal, the way, by the way, is a genius. I sometimes wonder if he's listening to Head On more than I hear based on something I said a couple of weeks ago. But listen to this answer.
She was petrified and her father is slashing her head and his hands are full of blood. Now, if a father can slash his own child's head with blood, we have a real problem. This is not a problem.
It's a religious holiday?
This is a religious holiday.
My parents had a moil slash my penis.
Score! Goal!
That's a, you know, it's very, I don't think you can possibly compare this.
No, you can't, because see, that's good, and God wants penises slashed, but no, that's not, no.
It's better afterwards.
That's inappropriate.
It's inappropriate.
What do we have to buy?
Wait, okay. Next question coming, sign in the front, dollars for food, not kasams. Oddly enough, there was not a sign that said dollars for medicine, not white phosphorus munitions. But I guess that's probably too many words to put on a sign, right?
It looks better afterwards.
That's inappropriate.
How much do we have to bomb them before there's peace?
No matter how long, they must be bombed.
No matter how long, they must be bombed. I hate to mention this, but this is what is termed in modern parlance eliminationist rhetoric. We recognize it because as liberals, we've had 8 years of eliminationist rhetoric pointed at us. Luckily, most of us didn't get killed. I mean, that is not for a minute to minimize the hell, damnation, torture, and horror of, a Hannity, savage O'Reilly watcher, viewer, listener, reader with lips moving and finger going across the page, walking into a Unitarian Universalist congregation last July in Knoxville, Tennessee, and blowing away because, them Democrats, they support the queers. They've gotten a few of us. Or the Democratic Party chairman in Arkansas who was blown away by a fundamentalist right-wing weirdo. Or the right-wing weirdo preachers who perform sex acts on unconsenting little children. That's not to minimize any of that, but they're not actually dropping, nobody's targeting our neighborhood. Well, we don't really have liberal neighborhoods, do we? We've been dispersed instead of rounded up, but you get what I'm saying. We're not getting bombed. This is a hell of a question.
That's inappropriate.
How much do we have to bomb them before there's peace?
No matter how long, they must be bombed.
Yeah, how many schools?
I think she's bombed.
How many schools do we have to blow up before there's peace?
When did Israel blow up any hospitals? They didn't blow up any hospitals.
They blow up schools, sorry.
How is Israel kicking Hamas ass?
We have a very intelligent way of going about it.
Okay, dude here has he's like, we've got a very intelligent way of going about it, Really? Guess he hasn't seen any of the hasn't read the story about the civilians who were rounded up and told they weren't safe and then put into another building where they were told they would be safe and then that building was flattened and they were killed. That doesn't seem very intelligent to me.
Intelligent. Very intelligent. We have the greatest intelligence out there. We try to minimize casualties as much as possible, civilians. Well, we have advanced technology.
Israel knows what schools Hamas is hiding in.
Correct.
And then they blow up the whole school.
They
very intelligent.
Yes.
They're weapons factories inside a school. How do you define that?
They're making missiles under the school desks.
Yeah. No, how do you define? No, under the school. There's underground tunnels.
Wherever there is terror, no matter where they hide, you got to get them out. And if the women and children...
Even in a school.
Wherever there is
even
terror.
In a school, you have to get them out. Otherwise, no peace. No peace. We have to fight them. They're hiding in school.
They're making bombs under the desks.
Exactly.
I can tell you one thing. Don't screw with the Jews because we kick butt. Bang!
What? Dude, it's a repeat.
This is a repeat of the Holocaust?
Yeah.
Yes.
How?
We're being persecuted.
No, wait. No, Gaza is not a repeat of the Holocaust. Don't think that there was a normal person at this rally.
It again, for the trillionth time ever.
So we're fighting a second Nazi war against the Nazis.
Yeah.
They want to kill all Jewish people.
It's the devil of the Holocaust.
You know, the reason why more Israelis haven't been killed or wounded is surely by the grace of God, because God has been performing just miracle after miracle. So
you hear that? It's a miracle when a father pulls his blown-up baby daughter out of the rubble. It's a miracle of God. I don't know about you, but I see that God coming. I'm going the other way. Lock your doors. Gaza is a miracle of God. That's some thug, that God.
Those who are dying are suffering God's wrath, but...
Now, what did we just spend the first hour talking about? How dangerous it is when religion starts dictating how people behave. I'm going to try not to interrupt this insane woman. Let's go back, okay? Let's back up just a hair. I'm not going to interrupt this crazy lady. Just let you hear her. Let you hear what abject, ought to be locked up insanity sounds like.
War against the Nazis.
Yeah.
They want to kill all Jewish people.
It's the devil of the Holocaust.
You know, the reason why more Israelis haven't been killed or wounded is surely by the grace of God, because God has been performing just miracle after miracle. Those who are dying are suffering God's wrath, but we also believe that when the angel of death comes out, he takes everyone in his path.
There are different prophecies that says that there will be great wars before the coming of the Messiah, and there are many things that we see have been tied in.
So after the downfall and the wars, the Mashiach comes back.
That's what we've been praying for, and that's what we hope will happen.
Can you imagine how sick that is? Can you imagine how disgusting that is? That you would actually pray to a deity for more war? I don't like dead air, and I don't like to... granted, I'm guilty of it. I've been known to take pauses that are broad enough to drive a truck through. But that one, because I've watched this, listened to this, and thought very seriously about whether or not I ought to play this. Because I'm sick of this story. I am gut sick of this story. I'm gut sick of slaughter. I'm gut sick of seeing parents carrying children, bloodied, beaten, and burned. You know, by the way, a little master class on white phosphorus for those of you who don't know. It is confirmed. The Israeli government is using white phosphorus munitions on Gaza. And no, it's not technically illegal because the United States did it too in Fallujah, and, you know, if we did it, it's not illegal. But there has been reporting from observers for organizations like Human Rights Watch regarding stacks of fused, airburst, white phosphorus munitions, proudly stamped made in the USA, by the way. You paid for those. You bought those. You've got a few bucks in the rape and slaughter and torture and murder of Gaza. Don't hide from it. I do, too. I, for one, would like to bet that David Silverman is right And there's no judgment day and there's no aftermath, because you know what? If there is, I'm screwed and so are you. Because if it's like it's been portrayed and you go up there and there's this guy in a white robe, harp in one hand, book in the other, St. Pete up at the podium going, Kincaid. No, wait a minute. Oh, man. All right. Roll them. Oh, no, not that. Sorry. Boys, get the toothpicks out and toothpick his eyes open. He's going to watch all of this. Hey, St. Pete, where's the part about, you know, the girl in the back seat and when I... I'm sorry. Were you under the impression that was a sin, son? That wasn't a sin. No. Roll it. And they'll show me that picture again of that father carrying that burned-up baby girl who now has brothers and sisters who number in the hundreds out of the rubble. And St. Peter will say, back it up. Back it up a little bit, would you? Thanks there, Jonah. Yeah, about there. Cue it up. And it'll show me sitting at a desk signing my name to a 1040. Acknowledging the payment of my taxes to the federal government. And then it'll show, a little Eichmann working in a munitions factory somewhere in the United States, and another little Eichmann building an F-16 maybe, and another little Eichmann making fusing mechanisms, and another little Eichmann in a chemistry lab making white phosphorus. And it'll show all these little Eichmanns, and it'll show the little Eichmann that's me licking the stamp and putting it on the envelope, and little Eichmann me walking to the mailbox. And little Eichmann me dropping my income taxes in. Or perhaps later on, little Eichmann me pushing send on the computer to electronically file my taxes. Little Eichmann me. Little Eichmann you. Little Eichmann us. Engaged in the banality of evil. Is that enough, boss? Yeah, Jonah, go ahead and hit play. And it'll show a little Eichmann on a hill next to an artillery piece pulling a lanyard and a kaboom, and or maybe pushing a button in an airplane and something falling out, and about maybe 200 feet off the ground, something that looks like fireworks but has a lot of white smoke. And it'll fall to the ground in pieces, burning hunks. And here's a chemistry lesson. I'm certainly no chemist, I'm no scientist, and I can't comprehend the mathematics involved, but I have read, and I do give credence to the fact, that one of the special properties, one of the reasons it's used as a weapon, one of the special properties of white phosphorus is the fact that it will continue to burn until it burns out. That once it touches your skin, you can't wash it off. That it will burn all the way through the skin, through the meat, through the gristle, through the muscles, through the tendons, through the bone, until it is depleted. And it does not, unlike most combustibles, it does not require the presence of oxygen. And that is what is used to advance the warfare that that religiously insane maniac said he prays for every day so that it will bring back the Messiah. You know what? No passes, folks. No passes to the Christians, no passes to the Muslims, no passes to the Hindus, no passes to the Jews. No passes. No passes for anyone who kills in the name of their imaginary cloud creature God. No passes. No passes. It is just as absolutely batshit crazy for a Christian to pray that God will, a few more wars and, that's the big one, son. You got to get going. See you later, Dad. And Jesus comes flying down out of the clouds in his holy rolls. to bring about the millennium. And he lines, and now this is the Christian version, and he lines up all the Jews, and he says, everybody, all you Jews, you gotta fall to your knees and worship me, cause I'm really the Messiah, and you blew it the first time, and you killed me, but this time, you can acknowledge me, or I'm gonna kill you! Don't blame me, this is what the religion preaches. And Pat Robertson and a reconstituted Jerry Falwell and Oral Roberts and every murderous, bloodthirsty, fundamentalist Christian who's ever drawn breath or ever preached about the second coming, they're all going to be standing there and they're all going to have swords and there will have grown fangs and the fangs will be dripping blood. And let's say the word, Lord, say the Lord, say the word. Oh, say the word, Jesus. And he'll wait to see how many Jews get on their knees. And then the ones that are left standing, he'll look at the Falwells and the Robertsons and the Robisons and the Dobsons and all the freaks and the Kenneth Copelands and the Joyce Myerses and the Rick Warrens and the Joel Osteens, and he'll look at them and say, put them to the sword. Oh, don't forget Pastor Hagee. Put them to the sword, boys. And they're going to go a romping Jew slaughtering on a heyday. That's the Christian version. On the other hand, this crazy bastard, he's got his own version where he prays for more war and more bloodshed and more horror so that the Messiah can come. Welcome to religion.
That's what we've been praying for, and that's what we hope will happen.
If Hamas could not differentiate between civilians and army, we don't need to either.
An eye for an eye, and the world goes blind. Max Blumenthal writes, hatred was plentiful at the rally Patterson addressed. Right in front of the stage, a man held a banner reading, Islam is a death cult. Rally attendees described the people of Gaza to me as a cancer. Called for Israel to, quote, wipe them all out. Insisting, quote, they are forcing us to kill their children in order to defend our own children. A young woman told me those who die are suffering God's wrath. They're not distinguishing between civilians and military, so why should we? An eye for an eye. That last came from a member of the group of Messianic Orthodox Jewish Chabad Lubavitch group that flocked to the rally. Max says, no one I spoke to could seem to find any circumstance in which they would begin to question Israel's war. No number of civilian deaths, no displays of extreme suffering, nothing could deter their enthusiasm for attacking one of the most vulnerable populations in the world with the world's most advanced weaponry, provided by, you know, us, the United States, little Eichmann's, all of us. That's my editorializing. Those are not Max Blumenthal's words. There are no limits, no matter what Israel does, no matter how it does it. Max says, the rally made me think of a passage in The Holocaust is Over, We Must Rise from Its Ashes, a powerful new book by former Israeli Knesset speaker and Jewish National Fund chairman Avraham Berg. Berg wrote, if you are a bad person, a whining enemy, or a strong-arm occupier, you are not my brother. Even if you are circumcised, observe the Sabbath, and do mitzvahs. If your scarf covers every hair on your head for modest, you give alms and do charity, but what is under your scarf is dedicated to the sanctity of Jewish land, taking precedence over the sanctity of human life, whosoever life that is, then you are not my sister. You might be my enemy. A good Arab or a righteous Gentile will be a brother or sister to me. A wicked man, even of Jewish descent, is my adversary, and I would stand on the other side of the barricade and fight him to the end. Let's finish this.
I think we should go with all force and just go in and get them all.
So what if Israel just, you know, wiped Gaza off the map? What would be so wrong with that?
Couldn't quite bring himself to say what he was thinking, that Gazan genocide would be fine by him. And of course, there's always a postscript. All
I seem like a good Jew?
You don't seem like a good Jew, but who am I to judge? You seem to be... not against terrorists, and I think that makes that a bad person.
See, there's a lot of psychology involved with this stuff. Babies in the womb are terrorists to these fanatics. Children learning to say mama and dada or baba are terrorists. Really. It's gonna take you some work to get through to this. Or if you're like me, it will. Because that's inconceivable to me. I have grandchildren in this house that if they happened to be of a slightly different, darker cast of skin and were living in Gaza, would be subject to slaughter. Yours too. Think about that. Oh, but Bob, you wouldn't raise your children to be terrorists. You can't say that the children who've been murdered in Gaza were being raised to be terrorists. They were being raised to be hopeless. That's for a fact. What was that last statistic from a week or so ago, that 50% of the Gazan children have no will to live? For a state that is absolutely fanatically obsessed with security, what does it think it's doing when it is creating an entire region of children that have no will to live? If you have no will to live, it's not a challenge to strap on the dynamite belt. Now, is it? Stupid, 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 moronic, stupid people. I mean, let's say you've got a house. And you see a fly buzzing around the kitchen. And it lands on your wall, and it's just sitting there, being nasty like a fly, and you pick up your sledgehammer, because you're going to get that fly once and for all. And you swing back all John Henry style with that sledgehammer, and you drive it through the wall, and you create a gaping hole in your kitchen. And maybe you strike some electrical wires, and you... Oh! And you get a little dose yourself. And then you kind of shake the cobwebs loose, and you realize now you've got a great big hole in your kitchen. You just got a dose of 110, and you missed the fly! Now, this is in no wise, don't get mad at me, that I am not equating with the people of Gaza with a fly or with any other sort of noxious creature. That is not my intent nor my purpose. It is rather to call attention to the foolhardiness of trying to create peace through massacres. Massacres! These are massacres! And I'm sorry, all the Old Testament stuff doesn't work anymore. You know, there are laws that say that, you know, if you rape a woman, all you have to do is pay her daddy the half her weight in so many pieces of silver or some such, and it's all okay. There are stories in the Old Testament about people doing that. You don't even have to read very far before you get to them. Is that okay? Then an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth is not okay either. I get this. It astonishes me that there are people who don't. That there are people so motivated by their fear that they are willing to countenance more murder. Last night, I mentioned in a conversation, the religion that was invented by the late, great Kurt Vonnegut called Bakaninism. Bokanon was the prophet. These are the last rites, as written down by Bokanon. This is the last rites of a Bokanonist. Each line is said once by the person giving the rites and then repeated by the dying person. God made mud. God got lonesome. So God said to some of the mud, "Sit up! See all I've made," said God, "the hills, the sea, the sky, the stars." And I was some of the mud that got to sit up and look around. Lucky me. Lucky mud. I, mud, sat up and saw what a nice job God had done. Nice going, God. Nobody but you could have done it, God. I certainly couldn't have. I feel very unimportant compared to you. The only way I can feel the least bit important is to think of all the mud that didn't even get to sit up and look around. I got so much. And most mud got so little. Thank you for the honor. Now mud lies down again and goes to sleep. What memories for mud to have. What interesting other kinds of sitting up mud I met. I loved everything I saw. Good night. I will go to heaven now. I can hardly wait to find out for certain what my wampeter was and who was in my carass and all the good things our carass did for you. Amen.
People that you made in your image, see them starving on their feet, 'cause they don't get enough to eat from God. Can't believe you didn't.
Dear God, sorry to disturb you, but I feel that I should be loud and clear. We all need a big reduction and a fighting in the street.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFL-CIO Legislative Director Bill Samuel expects Congress to take up the Employee Free Choice Act labor law reform by the spring. He says this reform would build worker buying power, so lacking in this economic crisis.
As we try to employ 3 to 4 million people, as President Obama has said he wants to do, if we can do it and restore purchasing power at the same time by giving workers collective bargaining rights, that will make sure the recovery is sustained. And it's a proven method, going back to the New Deal and the post-war period, that organized labor and collective bargaining helps the economy and helps strengthen the middle class.
The Employee Free Choice Act allows workers to form unions by simply signing union cards. Employers want to keep their right to force elections because during those elections, the boss can mount aggressive anti-union campaigns to instill fear into workers, to intimidate them out of their legal right to organize. A majority of workers say in polls they would join unions if they could, and this reform makes it easier for them to do it.
It's not just about workers' rights, but about human rights and improving the conditions for all workers.
Two of Hawaii's biggest state employee unions have expressed concern over a proposal by the island state's governor to furlough workers. Jesse Russell reports.
Hawaii Governor Linda Lingle is facing criticism from two unions representing state workers regarding a proposal that would ask workers to take one day off each month without pay. According to the governor, the island state would save $8 million each time workers take an unpaid day off. Hawaii, like most states in the union, is facing a financial crunch as the country copes with a recession. Under the proposal, essential employees such as hospital workers would be excluded from the furlough. Hawaii is facing an estimated $1.8 billion shortfall in the State Council on Revenues, says the budget needs to be cut by 25% over the next 3 years. A number of other states are also considering or implementing furlough measures. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger is seeking to furlough state workers one day per month and drop two paid holidays from the calendar. Under his proposal, which needs to be approved by the California State Legislature, Columbus Day would be eliminated, and the birthdays of Presidents Abraham Lincoln and George Washington would be combined into President's Day. Here is today's economic report. Who should you blame when good employees leave your company? Start with the boss. A new survey by Robert Half International discovered that 35% of good employees say they are likely to quit because they are unhappy with management. The study found that employees have some telltale signs when they are unhappy. For one, they tend to wear more professional attire, they are frequently absent, and they miss deadlines. The second most common reason for exceptional workers to quit is a lack of advancement opportunities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Okay, I admit it. Labor Radio was probably a bit of a non sequitur there. But I had to just take a minute. Sometimes you've got to clear things out. Because this is an unfair analogy. The smoke gets a little too thick. Smoke. White phosphorus burns until it burns out. No oxygen necessary. Don't you love science? Alfred Nobel invented dynamite, or TNT, technically. Thinking that he had finally found the weapon that was so horrific that humankind would never dare to use it against another human being. The same thing goes for the Gatling gun. That thing killed so fast and so brutally, literally could chop a person in half with one turn of the crank. The old Gatling thought, well, this'll sure teach people the futility and horror of war. Gatling and Nobel were, of course, dead wrong. Dead wrong. It is said that when the first atomic explosion took place out in Alamogordo, New Mexico, that Robert Oppenheimer, who had a taste for the theatrics, quoted the Bhagavad Gita. Oh, look, another religious book. How about that? Lo, I am become death, the destroyer of worlds. This in from Cindy.
Thanks for talking about Gaza today. My explanation to those unfamiliar, compare the power of Israel to the power of the Palestinians, who, by the way, are neighbors living side by side in Israel with Israelis, much the same way that our own nation has mixed people. Israel does, too. Think of Israel as the parent, because they have all the power, and think of the Palestinians as the children. So once upon a time, the child became unruly. So the parent landed on him and beat him into the ground to death, to death. Do you think that would be an appropriate punishment to murder one's child or neighbor because they won't bow to your ways? Just what is the point? Do we need to murder anyone who thinks differently or wants to live differently from us? Back to reality. I have one question. If the state of Israel was so heavily endangered by falling rockets so heavily that Israel needed to launch an all-out war of genocide on Palestine, why didn't we hear about those horrendous rocket attacks on the American-Israeli-influenced TV news as a precursor to this war? Why wasn't it on the news? Because there was, like, a fabulous blonde chick pulled over for suspicion of DUI in Hollywood, maybe? I've got no answer. And our buddy Robert, our correspondent from Japan, says, Happy New Year, Bob. Happy New Year to you, Robert. We're not being very good at it so far, are we? Then again, that whole peace on earth, goodwill to men thing sort of got blown straight to hell in Gaza, too, didn't it? Just listening to you talk about the Gaza problem, I was thinking that this killing has gone on since my father was alive and has been going on throughout my entire life and probably will continue on throughout my son's life and his son's life. As I have lived next to Gaza, pay attention here, this is Robert talking, not Bob. As I have lived next to Gaza some 25-odd years ago in Kibbutz Geveram, I know all about the Jewish perspective and the Palestinians. But I was listening to another commentator yesterday who made a good point. These people place the value of this holy land, and holy it is not, above the lives of their own children. People like this, as the commentator noted, are, well, crazy. People move to find better places. Your own ancestors, Bob, moved from Scotland when things got bad, as did mine. I have moved to Japan in order to live better, but I would never live in a place where my children could be wiped out in a minute from a rocket. I would find a safer place. Period. So why normal Jewish or Palestinian people have not moved the hell out of there, leaving all of the crazies who would just kill each other, beats the hell out of me. There were dozens and dozens of places being discussed where Jews could live after World War I and World War II. And there were many Arab countries that the Palestinians could live in, too. And to be frank, the land is not that nice. No, Bob, really, it's not. I traveled all throughout the country as we volunteers in a kibbutz got one free trip a month, and the only beautiful place that I liked was the Golan Heights, which Israel took from Syria. The rest is too dry, too dusty, too poor, and too plain worn out. There are many, many other countries which have more beautiful places and better coastlines, but I'm confused why these Israelis are God's chosen people. I did not see them as holier, more compassionate, nicer, friendlier, or more loving. In fact, they were just as warlike, if not more, and to be frank, a bit too focused on money to be critical. They looked upon me as a Christian, as a bizarre cult member. So the experience left me with the position that now I just don't care. I don't care about this issue. They will go on killing each other, risking their children again and again for this land. In short, they're just too crazy. As a former counselor, I have learned that you can waste a lot of time dealing with crazy people. Just my two bits. Oh, Robert, what a brilliant piece of writing. You said in what it took me maybe a minute and a half to read, what it took me 55 minutes to say. And, I mean, there's little bits of science in there. The land is too worn out. See, we see the photographs of, and we touched on this a little bit last night, too. You see the photographs or the footage of the vast, trackless plains of the Sahara where no human can live. I remember being in a class once with an anthropology professor who had been on a paleo dig in Libya in the Sahara. He was a great professor. Name was Page. John Page. One of those people who really influenced my life. And he said, talk about being in the middle of the desert and can't have a beer. Gaddafi can keep the place. But once upon a time, that Sahara, as he later explained to us, was verdant grassland prairie. And so, too, once upon a time, the cradle of civilization, the land between the two rivers, Mesopotamia, was verdant and green. That's where irrigation was invented. And whether it was the Ur or Eridu or the Assyrians, Babylonians, Chaldeans, Persians, what have you, they all irrigated the land. And they irrigated the land. Here's a fun word for, but you guys know this. I don't have to tell you. You guys know this word. Salinization. So many millennia irrigating ground and growing things on it and bringing, you know, foreign non-native water into it creates a phenomenon called salinization. Ask John Fox. He's in Australia. He can probably tell you a little bit about salinization. You know, forcing ground to do stuff that ground isn't supposed to do at that given time. And it's a function of that salinization that has turned it into a vast and trackless barren wasteland. So, too, with the land of milk and honey. Ain't fit to support human beings. You really can go and read Mark Twain's The Innocents Abroad, and you can find that in the late 19th century, he too was commenting on what a desolate, despairing place it was. And so thanks for bringing up that little bit of science, Robert. And yeah, you can waste a lot of time dealing with crazy people. And hasn't the world. Moving on to some other email, our buddy Marty asks. He says, I wish Max had the wit to ask those demonstrators, you've been told Hamas is firing rockets into Israel? How do you know that that's Hamas is actually doing the firing? Call it conspiratorial of me, Marty says, but I think this whole thing could very easily be a false flag. You know, Mossad, Blackwater, any number of outside agitators. That's what I'd ask. Because, see, any time there's a photograph published, and Lord knows there's a clampdown in Gaza where you can barely see the real horror of what's going on, any time the real hardcores will say, well, that's just propaganda. That dead baby's a piece of propaganda. You know, they want you to see that dead baby because, they're using their own people for propaganda. As if propaganda was some sort of a one-way street that the other country wouldn't possibly go down. Now, I get what Marty's talking about. And then from Gail, Bob, there are an estimated 2,000 Palestinian Christians in Gaza. Funny how these freakish Christian enablers are able to forget about them so easily. Stay human, Gail. Trying to, Gail. No, you are too. Yeah, see, there was a humongous... And, you know, let's remember this on this sixth to last day of the 8-year reign of horror that is George W. Bush. Let's remember that one of the most sizable Christian populations in the Middle East was in Saddam Hussein's secular Iraq. Yeah, really. But after we took him out, well, first of all, we bombed the Christians as indiscriminately as we bombed the Sunnis, as we bombed the Shia, because they were all just a dehumanized them, all set and ready for our eliminationist tactics. That Christian population in Iraq no longer exists. It just doesn't. Now let's engage in a little bit of speculation here. Let's say you've been bombed out of your home in Iraq, part of a culture that has existed for literally 2,000 years, among the oldest Christian communities on the planet, and the Christian president, George W. Bush, has destroyed that 2,000-year-old culture. Let's say that he does that, and you have to leave. See, that's the fun part of being a refugee. You don't know where you're going. You don't know how you're going. You just know you're going. seldom more than the clothes on your back. And what children are left surviving. And as a refugee, you will not eat, and you will starve, and you will go thirsty, that your little ones may have what little there is to be had. And maybe some of the Christians that didn't get bombed to death by Christian George Bush in Iraq, maybe some of them went to Jordan. Maybe some went to Syria. Maybe some. And I mean, you want to talk about feeling like you were born on a rotten day. Maybe some went to the Gaza ghetto. Out of the frying pan and into the fire. And Lord knows how you could possibly stay a Christian or a member of any religion with such profound counter-existential death raining upon you. Merciful heaven. Merciful heaven. That's okay. Wouldn't happen. Wouldn't happen if God didn't, sure enough, want those people dead. Man, is that hard to stomach. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, I said at the beginning of the program, we had other places to go, and we do have other places to go. But it's a tough trip. It's a very difficult trip. It's hard to turn away from horror like this and just try to have some sort of fun with some bit of political idiocy. And let's remember something, please. Let's do remember that none of this would have happened. Come on, my brother and sister Eichmanns. None of this would have happened without George W. Bush. Sure, we ran the audio, the funny audio of the louder motor drives, louder flash units than the 12 claps George Bush got at his final press conference yesterday. And sure, just like bringing a plastic turkey to a Thanksgiving Day celebration in the Middle East, the White House had to dummy up that press conference, it turns out. There were so few people in the room that when Dana Milbank writing, when the appointed hour of 9:15 a.m. arrived, the last two rows in the seven-row briefing room were empty, and a press aide told the White House interns to fill those seats. Really, there are seven rows of seven seats. There are 49 seats, and they had to fill the last 14 seats with, frankly, dummies. There is stuff that is worth, it really is worth mentioning tonight. And by the way, it's 20 minutes past 8 o'clock here on the East Coast. There's only 40 minutes worth of conversation left. If you want to join in, please feel free. You know, I am truly sorry. I am truly sorry that I have spent over an hour of this evening talking about the rape of Gaza. I'm sorry it's going on. But somebody's got to talk about it, and somebody's got to talk about it at length, and it can't, and a conversation about it can't be busted up by some ad for a Swedish mattress or a baldness cure. It just can't. I mentioned that line from Death of a Salesman the other night. Attention must be paid. Attention must be paid. And it's not, you know, please. Let's keep some perspective on this. And I don't mean to sound cruel or hard-hearted. But there are, what, 900, 1,200, 1,400 dead Palestinians in Gaza? All of whom, all of whose murders have precipitated almost unfathomable grief. But as I said, it would not have happened but for the theft of an election in 2000. You cannot argue that this would be going on if this was the last days of the Gore presidency. You realize that's what this really is. These last 6 days should be the 6 days in which we're saying goodbye to a just and decent and honest and profoundly intelligent man by the name of Al Gore. There's enough science out there, and I don't understand a dime's worth of it, to suggest that maybe there are alternate realities. Maybe there are universes as that touch on all points, but are as separate as two pages lying against each other in a book. Maybe there's a world where Al Gore is saying goodbye to a grateful nation now. I'd like to think there is. And that in that world, the trade towers are still standing. And that no jets plummeted into the ground or into any buildings on September 11th, 2001. Maybe indeed. And particularly that there are no fathers, no mothers carrying the charred remnants of their children out of rubble in Gaza City. None of this could happen without George W. Bush. For 8 years, the man has been the enabler of everything evil that has trod this planet. If he didn't do it himself, he made it possible for it to happen. You cannot have a September 11th without December 2000 and the decision in Bush v. Gore. It is simply impossible. And while we mourn, some of us at least, Lord knows the right-wingers and the people who were dancing in the streets of New York on January the 11th, 2009, aren't mourning any dead Gazans, children, adults, women, men. It makes no difference. They're not being mourned. There's a whole bunch of this country that's celebrating their slaughter. And I have no ability to even imagine what happens inside their skulls. But let us remember that before December 2008, when death rained from the skies over Gaza, when white phosphorus fell on children and burned until it burned itself out all the way through their flesh, let us remember that for 5 long years, that same death has fallen upon that cradle of civilization that I described just a few minutes ago. Because, you see, the Iraqis weren't crazy people fighting over sacred sand. They were people who were trying to survive under very difficult circumstances, generated in part by Saddam Hussein, to an extent, but generated far more by the death and destruction that was rained down upon them by our most puissant Christian president, George W. Bush. And they are dead. They are dead, too, at the hands of we little Eichmanns. And they are dead in a number well past comprehension, well past comprehensibility. They are dead in their million. One-sixth. One-sixth of what Adolf Hitler did to the Jewish people of Europe, George Bush did to the people of Iraq. And they are dead in their hillsides in Afghanistan. And everywhere that George Bush has cast his gaze, poor people, sometimes illiterate, often struggling merely for the bread, their daily bread. Everywhere George Bush has cast his gaze, poor people have fallen dead as though touched by the angel of death himself. And we forget that at our peril, and we forget our complicity in it. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Hey, Brother Luke, what's up?
Well, one thing I kept on hoping when I was listening to that thing when I first played it was I just wanted to ask that lady, it's like, could we use ovens? Would that be more humane?
Yeah. See, that, and I mentioned that last night, Luke. The irony was not lost on me that the Israelis told a bunch of people sitting huddled, 40 people huddled in one building, that they weren't safe there and that they needed to go where they'd be safe in the other building, and rounded them up into that building and then blew the hell out of them.
Of course, they have those precision bombs.
Yeah. I mean, they
know exactly what they're hitting.
God, there should. How can, Luke, tell, how can there not be a war crimes trial for this? How can there not?
Because, as usual, we have the veto in the UN, and anybody that were to use the word war crime, we would veto it before anybody had a chance to say it the second time.
Can the people of the world not at least demand that Ehud Olmert and Tzipi Livni and the rest of that crowd at least stand in the dock and try to justify their actions?
Well, look at it this way. Every time we turn around, we see George Bush crying about the countries getting nuclear weapons. I don't ever hear anybody complain about the fact that the Israelis refuse to let IAEA inspectors into their country. But if they show up, they're told to get back on the plane.
Yeah.
They demand it of every other country.
Very true.
Oh, but what I want to talk about tonight was, I know this was important. But like I say, I'm just sitting there watching that thing Monday going, you put a set of steel marbles in his hand, put him in a captain's coat, and my God, it's Humphrey Bogart doing Captain Queeg.
Yeah, they thought I was crazy, but I fooled him. I fooled him with the strawberries. Yeah, I know.
Like,
he is.
Nothing was his fault. Nothing,
no,
ever.
No, nothing, nothing.
You know, the only thing he apparently tried to say he was sorry about was the mission accomplished banner. Oh, yeah, he was real sorry about that. I'm just curious. I wanted somebody to say, well, were you real sorry that you held the people in a aircraft carrier out at sea for an extra day so you could have a photo op? You know, were you real happy that you turned the boat around so no one could see the San Diego skyline in the background so you could fly in on a jet and play Top Gun for a day?
Boy, there's so much not to forget, you know?
Well, the one that got to me, I saw it today, I think it was today, it was somebody who wrote about it, said, it was amazing that during all that whole diatribe the other day, no one brought up the name Terry Schiavo. Like, Mr. Bush, how did you feel being God for a few days when you decided you knew more than medical science? When you decided you knew more than anybody, of course. And it proved you knew nothing less than anybody. Except maybe your brother, who probably knows even less on that subject.
Well, too true.
But, you know, it was just amazing to listen to everything that, of course, he wanted to take full credit because we haven't been attacked since 9/11, and my only suggestion is, okay, you can get that as long as you admit to take all the guilt, perhaps for what led up to 9/11. But again, no, that wasn't his fault.
Nothing ever is.
Just because he ignored people warning, you know, the experts warning, oh, what do they know? George Bush has his gut, and his gut knows better. You know, and then I had the thing with Katrina. Well, he was concerned. It's like, do we forget that little piece of tape we all got to see of George Bush sitting down in one of the situation rooms when they were talking about Katrina and George looking like he was ready to nod off? because he was so uninterested in the subject. They came out about 2 weeks afterwards, but of course they didn't want anybody to see that.
Oh, I remember that. And there, and he did. He looked like he was so bored he could hardly stand it. Or I don't know, maybe that was his focused look. You can't tell with him.
I was going to say, if he'd been more focused, he'd have been snoring. But, you know, and it, you know, it's just thing after thing after thing, and it's like, oh, it wasn't his fault. He inherited an economy already in a recession. It's like, wait a minute. It didn't, you know, as people have said, it didn't start till 2 months after you had taken office.
But I remember that too, and they couldn't decide which story they wanted to go with, because when he was running, he said, well, it looks like the economy's running way too hot, so we're going to have some tax cuts to cool the economy down. And then he got in, and the economy went in the toilet, and he said, well, we needed some tax cuts to jumpstart the economy. And, you know, finally, bless his heart, addressing himself not to Dim Leader. Dim Leader is done. Dim Leader is a cipher now, Luke. But addressing himself to Barack Obama, Paul Krugman came out and said it today.
Oh, yeah.
He said, stop with the tax cut BS. This is not what we need.
I mean,
I trust a Nobel laureate in economics on stuff like this.
Do we forget what happened when Clinton took office? He had to force through a tax increase on certain people, and amazingly enough, business improved.
Sure did.
But of course, the right wing will tell you that that had nothing to do with it. Absolutely nothing.
Now, Krugman did acknowledge that Obama had made a campaign promise out of reducing payroll taxes.
Yeah.
So he's probably stuck with that. But the rest of that BS about, you know, there's Rick Warren at the inauguration, and then there's bowing and scraping to the right wing.
Well, you know, it's like we've said before. We've learned. Obama apparently hasn't learned yet. He's not gone through it enough. Just remember, whenever you turn your back on the right wing, that's when they pull out the big knives and go for your spine. You know, we've learned not to turn our backs on right wingers, because that's just giving them a free shot. You know, we tried being nice before, and every time we've done it, we've got kicked in the teeth.
You know, I'm being reminded in the chat room, Luke, that at that meeting we were discussing, where George looked like he was going to sleep, It was that meeting where he was told that Katrina could lead to as many as 60,000 dead.
Uh-huh.
And even with that being said, he just sat there, beep, you know.
You got to remember, now, this was before he left on his little trip to go out to, remember who? John McCain's birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
Where he got to go out and play air guitar.
Yeah, the original guitar hero.
You know, and it's like, I'm sorry, if somebody tells me that's happening, it's like, you know, tell John, you know, send him a big card. You know, and tell him we love him dearly, but we got something else we got to do for this for a little bit, John. We'll catch up to you. You know, amazingly enough, we think there's a couple of southern cities that may disappear under the water. For some strange reason, we think that's more important. Oh, silly old us.
Crazy us. Yeah, see, that's why we're not president. We're not smart enough to understand that sometimes cities have to drown.
You know what I mean? And, of course, we turned away people that offered help. You know, those silly Cubans, they offered to send doctors.
Well, see, that was – now, see, there we are at propaganda again, Luke. Because that was just propaganda.
Well, sure it was, but hey.
Yeah, they were only offering to help drowning people because they wanted to make us look bad.
Well, so we're like, look, we've run all over the world helping people, and I'm glad we've been able to do it. But you know what? It's kind of nice when we're in trouble if we know we got people around that will offer to help us. And I'm not too ashamed to take help, because we needed it. I mean, we had part, you know, we mostly concentrate on New Orleans, but like I say, the whole Gulf Coast, there were places in Mississippi and over into Florida and Alabama that essentially just got washed away. I mean, the only thing you could find to houses were foundations, and sometimes you didn't find that. Oh, you know what I mean? But like I said, I was just sitting watching that thing, and I was just sitting there going, 45 minutes. I wonder how close that was to being the longest press conference he's ever had.
I'm sure he was convinced that it was by the time it was over.
But you know what I mean? You're just sitting there listening to it and going, you know, it's like I said, I was just seeing Captain Queeg. I'm sitting there going, you know, because apparently we must have, He must be a clone. That must be it, because somebody else did all these other things. It wasn't him. You know, of course, he had to go on things like his plastic turkey run, you know, to Iraq a few times.
God, somebody's got to write the book.
Oh, I mean, you know, like I say, they really should just go back and look at, I mean, I would guess 10 to 1 we could probably pull up the Washington Post and the New York Times day by day and just list all of the things that were going on. And he was just, you know, it's like people have been saying lately, it's like, people say, well, why is Obama doing so much? I said, because George Bush has put the country on autopilot, and he's gone. You know, he may show up every once in a while, change clothes at the White House, but that man has left the office. He's letting it run on automatic. I mean, right now, if we had a major disaster, I don't know if they could find him.
Oh, mercy.
I mean, that's what he's been for the last couple of months.
Well, see, there's this,
the
you know, we were talking about the press conference yesterday. You know where you have to be tomorrow night, right?
Oh, God, like I say, this, if we thought the press conference was imagined, this has got to be, I'm just curious I'd like to see the room where the speechmakers are trying to make sense out of this.
Because tomorrow night he's going to give, during prime time,
a farewell address.
A farewell address. You know, just like George Washington. A little while back, Steve Scully, on December 18th, when he did his exit interview with Dim Leader, he asked him if he was, he told Steve Scully that he might avoid a farewell address because he didn't want the American public to, goodness gracious. Let me take a deep breath and try to do this straight. He didn't want the American people to go through a... One more time, and then I'll quit. He didn't want the American public to go through a real emotional goodbye with him. Somehow this ain't going to be Ingrid Bergman and Humphrey Bogart on the tarmac and somebody saying we'll always have Paris.
It's what it was. It's like, you know, it was a fast horse and getting out of town. It's like...
Scully said, will you deliver a farewell address in this office? George said, thinking about it. A lot of presidents have, and I'm giving it serious thought. I don't want it to be, you know, kind of a real emotional goodbye. If I give it, it's going to be trying to leave behind some lessons learned.
Had to be awake to have learn a lesson.
You know what? That's one of those moments where you just wish you had the quart mason jar with the peach, with the half a peach floating down in the bottom of the shine. You know, Jimmy Buffett said, just down it upright.
Oh God, you know, it's one of those things. Like, say, when you're just sitting there going, it's one of those. I don't want to hear it. I'd probably enjoy seeing it because I'm at the point now. Just listening to his voice generally makes me ill.
Well, you know, yesterday they asked. Dana Perineal, about the farewell address. And she said,
he'll uphold the tradition of presidents using farewell addresses to look forward by sharing his thoughts on greatest challenges facing the country and on what it will take to meet them.
Now when is this one, 8 or 9 o'clock?
It says prime time, so I'm assuming it has to be 8.
Okay.
Are
you going to be on and do a rebuttal?
I really should try to figure out a way to run the audio.
Maybe you need to tape it, and then the next night come on and just stop the tape at times and, you know, put the comments in, because we don't want to miss anything, I'm sure, you know what I mean. But it's one of the ones that sort of like, say, you'd love to have it where you had it sort of TiVo'd, where you could sit there and just sort of stop it when you want to and just make a few comments.
I want one of them TiVo things. You know, it's funny, I'm looking at the Reuters account of the farewell speech. And from a journalistic standpoint, Luke, there's something missing.
Words?
No, there's words there, but, you know, the heart of journalism, you know, I mean, like, first day of journalism 101, right?
Who, what, where, when, and why?
And how, and sometimes how much.
Yeah.
U.S. President George W. Bush will deliver a televised farewell address to the American people on Thursday night, the White House said. Bush, who leaves office on January 20th when Barack Obama is sworn in, will give a 10 to 15-minute speech in front of an audience in the East Room of the White House, Press Secretary Dana Perino said Monday. It'll be Bush's last scheduled public event. This is not going to be a swan song. It's something where he's trying to refight. The White House has asked the major television networks for a slot to broadcast his address, but an exact time has not yet been set.
like I said, the boys are in the writing room going, can we make any sense out of this, guys? Come on.
You know, I mean, you can just see him at ABC going, yeah, but damn, Dana, I mean, we've got a rerun of Cop Rock scheduled. And NBC going, hey, but what, we were planning on running Hello, Larry.
Hello, Larry would win.
The hell yes, it would.
It's one of the things, except for the fact that we have, I guess you call it the morbid curiosity of what he's going
to do. Well, it is. It's like watching but that's, once you get past the anger and the horror of this man, you know, it's been 8 years. It has been an 8 year long, slow moving train wreck.
I'm sitting here and I've got Oberman on mute while I'm talking to you. His first one of his, you know, his 50 scandals, the Bush,
yeah,
was seat filler gate.
Well, and there we, I had it just a few minutes before. I'm always so happy to be ahead of the curve, Luke.
You did notice that one of the things they said about the thing was that, it was amazingly enough, of course, he didn't at all once call on Helen Thomas.
Oh, no, even though it was a half-empty room, right.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm told by Sue in the chat room that the Associated Press is reporting it will air on Thursday evening at 8 p.m. That's 8 p.m., 7 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Pacific. Please make a note of it.
God, you know, it's like saying you're just sitting there just watching some of this stuff just going, no.
But see, it's frustrating, you know, while I don't waste a lot of time or lose any sleep thinking about the suits at the networks, for, as the Bible says, they have their reward, I can't help noting that, you know, if you give a 15-minute speech, then that means that you've got to create 30 minutes.
Another 15 minutes.
Yeah, you got 15 minutes of BS that you've got to create. And if it happens to be fall during a time when you would otherwise have an hour-long show running, then you've got to create 45 minutes of BS.
Well, I'm just curious. I'm figuring what it'll be is the first 5 minutes they come on and do the introduction, you know, and then Dim Sum gets up and does his speech. Then they cut back to Keith Olbermann, and he's pulling his head out of the waste can as he says goodbye to dinner.
Yeah. Now, did I get all the vomit off my mouth? I hope I didn't smear my makeup. Right.
Then hopefully, as we say, then we'll have somebody else come in and talk. I saw today on the Huffington Post, I think I sent it to you, the thing from, I never can say his name right, Cenk Uygur.
No, Cenk Uygur, yeah.
Cenk Uygur. I'm sorry, I never can pronounce his name right.
Well,
I enjoyed his little comparison between Air America and Fox News. He said, isn't it amazing, in the last year, let's see, Air America's had one of their former hosts get elected to the U.S. Senate. The other one's now hosting an hour-long cable news show. Now let's look over at Fox. Well, nobody's got elected to the Senate. Said no one's got a new show. And most of them over there are losing their percentages of, you know, every time you turn around.
And Combs left.
Yeah, Combs is left.
Did you happen to catch his appearance on Colbert?
Colbert.
That was precious.
Oh yes, I really enjoyed that. I think it's over YouTube if anybody's missed it.
It was at Crooks and Liars too, a couple of pages in.
But that was just one of those just precious things. You're just like, yeah. The one I liked, I think it was the first of the week, was I think it was this week, was John Stewart had Rachel on, and they were on there discussing about things, you know, and she was talking about how she enjoyed interviewing people. Said she even enjoyed, you know, when she went back and forth to Pat Buchanan, said, because at least he did, you know, he wouldn't flinch, he'd go right at him. And she said, and was it John Stewart had compared the people over there as the Munsters, I believe was who he's comparing them to. And of course, she said yes, and Pat Buchanan, of course, is Grandpa Munster. And I was sitting there going, Al Lewis somewhere is screaming his head off.
Yeah, because Al Lewis was like a decent human being, right?
Oh, he was a little bit crazy on the outside, but hey, he was a fun guy from everything I ever saw about him.
Herman. That's one of my favorite television shows of all time.
Oh, and him and Fred were friends. They loved doing things like that. Oh, good.
Were they? Yeah, they were tight, weren't they?
Yeah. Well, you remember? Was it, now let's see, Al ran for, was it mayor of New York or governor at one time? A couple of times, you know, after the, you know, just a few years before he died.
Yeah, and he ran on a decidedly liberal platform, didn't he?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. But he, like I say, he was just a hoot. Well, I tell you what, buddy, it's a quarter till. Let me let some other people on. And you have a good night. Like I say, if you tape it Thursday night, why don't you hold on and do the point-by-point rebuttal on Friday?
I would love to do that, and I may, in fact. That might be fun for Friday. Or maybe I'll just scream all the way through it tomorrow night. One never knows.
Well, I figure I'll listen to you, then probably turn over and listen to Malloy afterwards, because Malloy, I'm sure, will be loaded for bear.
Yeah, poor Malloy. You know, I heard him last night talking about 8 years of following Bush and how it just made him feel kind of icky. And I really sympathize with that. Because it's not like you sit around waiting to bring out the next bummer, but it's what you wind up doing, Sam.
Well, my big question is now, you know, they have the day when they're doing the inauguration. Now, when they're at the inauguration, is this when Obama's people have the people go into Cheney's area and check for booby traps?
Or just get the safe with the native soil out of the building? I mean. He's prone to the flying back in and hanging by his heels again. Jeez.
I'm going to say, since he's been down in the lower levels of the White House, I'm sure he's had a couple of new tunnels dug, probably leading to the sewers, so he can sneak back in at a time of his own choosing.
Oh, God.
You know, it's like we said.
And the question is, who will be his Renfield now?
It's like we said. First thing I would do if I was Obama's team is, okay, guys, we're pulling out all the computers and we're putting in new computers.
I wouldn't trust a piece of Ethernet cable that came from that administration.
That's what I mean. I'd have the whole place totally rewired and you know, it's like, take those things out into New Jersey and put them in a dump somewhere, please.
Yeah, burn them first.
All right. You have a good
one. All right. Take care, Luke.
See ya.
Bye now. Calling from the hills of East Tennessee, that is... That's our buddy Luke. I guess this was. I'll try to get away from the Gaza Strip. But damn, that's part of the job here, isn't it? And it was. Be there or be square, 8 p.m. tomorrow evening. And you know what? It's going to be a matter of looking forward, the White House says. You got to wonder if he's just going to go through it and pretend that there aren't over 1,000 dead Gazans. How do you do that? I mean, it's not like he can just come out in a party frock and start saying, the sun will come up tomorrow. You just can't do that. You just can't. So, the one last thing to close things out a little bit. As Barack Obama comes in, that there is a considerable groundswell of folks on the Democratic side of the aisle, and Lord knows a groundswell of folks on the right-wing side of the aisle, who are clamoring for an escalation. Yeah, really, really, I know. Clamoring for an escalation in, of all places, Afghanistan, because it's not screwed up enough yet. Well... I got to give kudos to Brave New Films and Bob Greenwald. Bob's been on the program in the past. Maybe I should get him on here at some point again. Brave New Films is leading the charge on an effort. The name of the campaign is called Get Afghanistan Right. And I hope that's not along the same lines of the title of that great Michael Caine movie, Get Carter. No. Get Afghanistan Right. And bloggers are going to be talking about the risks that are posed by ramping up the war in that benighted corner of the world. Bloggers are also going to be writing about what is going on there now, you know, the forgotten war. They'll be writing about what the war means here at home and hopefully looking for some potential solutions. Robert Greenwald himself has said, "With the economy continuing a severe decline and the international scene in turmoil, we absolutely cannot afford a hugely expensive troop increase in Afghanistan. The country desperately needs many of the reforms and programs proposed by the incoming Obama administration, but an escalation in Afghanistan will cripple our ability to mitigate the effects of the recession while making that country less stable. The success of the president-elect's broader agenda depends on his ability to get us out of President Bush's wars." God, I hope they're successful. And to the extent that we can help here, we will do what we can to advance that idea. With all due respect to Barack Obama, I have argued in the past that Afghanistan is a place that wasn't even successfully held by perhaps the most brilliant military mind ever to have been unleashed upon this world, the young Macedonian Alexandros. Later called the Great. He and Hephaestion and Ptolemy and all of his generals and all of his army, having done astonishing things at places like Tyre and Gargamella, and having burned the treasure that was Susa to the ground, could not keep and hold Afghanistan. Just couldn't. And I have remarked in the past that there is no way that we have a military mind in this country, let alone George Bush, who is smarter than Alexander. Well, I don't want to ruffle anybody's feathers that I haven't already ruffled, but I tell you this. Barack Obama is not smarter than Alexander either. No. And the fact of the matter is, just as is the case in Iraq, and just as it was in Vietnam, you cannot get Afghanistan right. The only way to get Afghanistan right is to get out of Afghanistan. Period. As I have said in relation to Gaza and Israel, those who would want peace must seek peace. And you do not seek peace in wars like this by extending wars like this. A quick note in, I missed it earlier, during the conversation with David Silverman, News Ninja Susan said with regard to plaques in Kentucky when I suggested that they hang a plaque for everybody, "Don't forget the flying spaghetti monster." Oh, yeah, well, see, I didn't get to the other story. I'll try to get to that tomorrow night. I think the flying spaghetti monster may have to go on a mission. A mission to Kentucky and a mission to Mississippi. Hopefully we'll talk about that later. Thanks, Susan. I remind you all that this is listener-supported conversation radio. If what goes on here matters to you at all, I can only suggest that what matters to you and goes on here happens because of your financial goodness, as well as that of the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. If you want to see things like the horn going to the Green Jobs Conference in February, if you think it would be interesting to find out what folks are saying at the American Atheist Convention in Atlanta, well, there's only one way to make that happen, because it is entirely inefficient for me to gather together the traveling gig rig and just stand on the side of the road with my thumb out. It doesn't work that way. and just to make it from month to month, is, gosh, I hate to use this word. No, it's not a miracle. It's not a miracle. It is an act of human determination. Your human determination and the folks on the horn's human determination to be here and bring you something that is radically different, fresher, better, and newer than virtually anything happening out there. So there's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. I implore you to use it. And there is also a mailing address for those of you who prefer to operate by snail mail, and that is Head-On, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, West Virginia, 25801. Many thanks to David Silverman from American Atheist for his hour's time. It was a wonderful conversation, and I genuinely appreciate it. And I hope we'll do it again soon. Many thanks also, as ever, to our chief engineer, John Fox, to our IT professional, Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch, the most overworked man in liberal talk. Everything that happens here on the horn happens because of what Ben does at whiterosesociety.org. The streams that come from White Rose go to the website, and they also go out to iTunes, to Receiva.com, to Phonostar, a couple of other outlets as well. Thank you, Ben. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.